You two are real actors, huh?
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Just during dinner for the next few years.
There's no substitute for a loving parent. According to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Okay, I guess.
Is that the best you can do?
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel, dealing with a mixture of clouds and clear sky from here on out. Into late night, 53 will be the low. Sunshine, a few passing clouds expected on Wednesday, but a dry 73, so a little bit cooler than we were on Tuesday. Thursday's weather, well, chance of thunderstorms, 50% to be exact, with a high in the mid-60s. And looking into Friday's forecast, the risk of thunderstorms and showers hanging around exists as well.
WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Hey, good evening. 6.5 minutes after 7 o'clock, Tuesday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. What a beautiful, beautiful day. This is the way spring was meant to be. A gentle breeze blowing by. Let's go outside and do the show there. Can't do it. Sorry. I feel kind of bad. I was sort of mean to that poor woman last night. And upon further reflection, maybe I shouldn't have done things the way I did them, and I regret it, because obviously, you know, when you get in your car in the morning and the radio's on one station, you know, that other station, the one that has the good, godly right-winger talking in the morning, and then you get in your car to go home at night, and there's a demon in your car changing the radio channels. And that's got to be frightening. It's got to be just terrifying for people. So, you know, I do owe an apology. But what it boils down to is when the sun goes down, at least around here, the facts come out. You understand? So, I don't know. I could be wrong. We may have a problem with demon radio possession here in the Beckley area. Let me know if we do. I mean, the thing, you know, something getting hold of your car radio and just turning it to NR. Then again, maybe it's not demonic. Maybe it's angelic. For the truth shall set you free. And we do deal in a lot of facts around here. So beyond all that, I guess there was a real surprise in Rome today, to the effect that a bunch of, you know, old men wearing dresses and lace aprons elected another old guy in a dress and a lace apron to be Pope. But this wasn't just any old white guy in a dress and a lace apron. This, what's his name, Joseph Ratzinger? This was an old German white guy in a dress and a lace apron. An old German white guy in a dress and a lace apron who just happens to be an alumnus of, I'm not making this up, the Hitler Youth. And a veteran of the Wehrmacht. As an added bonus, he's also the church's Grand Inquisitor. The heir apparent to Torquemada. He's also the joker who interfered with our secular electoral process by telling American priests not to give communion to politicians who supported women and their rights to their own bodies. Yeah, that guy. Now, I can understand you saying, well, Bob, maybe he had to join the Hitler Youth. Maybe he had to join the Wehrmacht. Maybe he just doesn't like women. And I'll grant you each and every one of those premises. But this is also an old German white guy in a dress and a lace apron who talks a lot about the dangers of, here's that code phrase, moral relativism. the dangers of moral relativism. Wilbur. You know, he's one of these people that believes that there are absolute truths in life. Now, I believe in absolute scientific truths. I believe in the law of gravity. I believe in the... And it's not a belief... See, there's that stupid word again. Believe. I don't believe in the law of gravity. The law of gravity is the law of gravity. I know it to be a law. It is a fact. I know the law of the conservation of mass and energy to be a fact. The first and second laws of thermodynamics. What else? What are some... the Boyle's gas laws. Those are absolute truths. So there are absolute truths. But I don't think that's quite what Cardinal Ratzinger is getting at. But he, you know, absolute truths for him are that, you know, men are better than women, white people are better, you know how it goes. Catholics are better than Jews. Yeah, this guy authored a paper at one point that said Catholics were the only Christians. So after all that reaching out by John Paul, apologize to the Jews, apologize to the Muslims, all that reaching out, and the church just took a great big honking leap backwards. I'm not kidding. They literally elected a Nazi to be Pope. Now, I'm not Roman Catholic, so it matters not a whit to me. But if I were one, I would be hanging my head in shame. The College of Cardinals, a whole bunch of old guys wearing dresses and lace aprons, just elected a Nazi pope. But if there are things in this life that are absolute truths, you think maybe one of those absolute truths might be that being a Nazi, no matter for how short a time or why, disqualifies you absolutely from leading anything calling itself Christian? That makes sense to me. You know, forgiving an old Nazi is one thing. Elevating him to the papacy is entirely another. I mean, isn't elevating a Nazi to the papacy a moral relativism of the very worst kind? I mean, this is the guy that old John Paul II called the Panzer Cardinal. You know what a Panzer was, right? Those big old tanks that the Nazis rolled across Eastern Europe with and rolled into the Battle of the Bulge with? Sure. John Paul II called Ratzinger the Panzer Cardinal. So now, I guess, the church has a Panzer Pope. This guy's not the successor to John Paul II. He's the successor to Pius the Whatever, who aided and abetted the Nazis. Oh, way to go, Cardinals. Way to go. And then President Bonghit comes out and starts talking about it. This is a beauty. He's a man who serves the Lord. Hey, George, you nit-headed moron, he served Hitler! Ugh. Then George prattles on with, "We remember well his sermon at the Pope's funeral in Rome, how his words touched our hearts and the hearts of millions. We join with our fellow citizens and millions around the world who pray for continued strength and wisdom as His Holiness leads the Catholic Church." Nice one, George. That's going to go over with your right-wing religion industry followers real well. Like something in a punch bowl, you know what I mean? The people down at dear old Bob Jones U are probably already rolling on the ground and moaning. Oh, and another thing. What's with the "we remember well"? We remember well. Huh? And the "his words touched our hearts." And "we join with." Has George gone completely around the Cracker Barrel? Does he think he's good Queen Bess now? "We recall with great reverence," yada, 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 yada. "We are not amused. Our head hurts, and we would like a nap." Oh, brother. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
She keeps him away at Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Melody cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building, a remedy with Chris John and Kennedy.
Where there's a tornado, where there's a forest fire, Mother Nature is at her worst.
Where there's a search, and there's a rescue.
Where there are Americans in need.
When disaster strikes, a one volunteer force.
How do we check and simply do what needs to be done?
You are the Civil Air Patrol, the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force. To join, call 1-800-FLY-2338.
Or log on to the World Wide Web at www.cap.gov.
Have you ever wondered where to send your visiting friends and relatives when they visit this year? Make plans to visit the Southern West Virginia Convention and Visitors Bureau's Travel Expo at Crossroads Mall April 30th and May 1st to learn about all the great attractions and activities right here in our own backyard, Southern West Virginia. Got it in here? Call 252-2244 for more information.
For many Americans, the dream of owning a home is out of reach because they lack a down payment or they want to save their money for a rainy day. What most Americans don't know is that there are grants available from a nonprofit organization that cover your down payment, closing costs, and there are minimal income restrictions. The grants can include a one-year mortgage payment protection plan, which means if you lose your job, the plan will pay your mortgage for up to 6 months. You never have to repay the grant, and only seller participation is required. Imagine it, getting into the home of your dreams with no money down. Now, turn your dreams of homeownership into a reality, and turn your next rent payment into your first mortgage payment. Join the 50,000-plus that have used a grant from this nonprofit organization nationwide by calling 1-866-NO-DOWN-P. That's 1-866-NO-DOWN-P. Or visit us online at www.neighborhoodgold.com.
WWNR Beckley.
That's the radio for the rest of us. Head On.
Welcome back. 18 minutes after 7 o'clock. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is our little radio sandbox of the air. Carrying on, fussing, fuming, and so forth. We like to call it Head On. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
Reasonably well, yourself?
Oh, pretty good. I think I'm getting over the malaria or the crud or whatever it was.
Well, listen, the grip or whatever it used to be called, that can be quite devastating, so you better take care of yourself.
I think
you should have a setback. It's worse than the initial onset.
That's true, too. It may be a Shakespearean ague for all I know.
Well, we can't have you getting sick now. We've got to have somebody to take you. To take people behind the woodshed when they need to go. I'm going to stop harping on that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to just make a few comments about the newly elected Pope.
Yes.
And it was the man that I thought it was going to be, because if he was the head of doctrine and the keeper of the church doctrines under the auspices of John Paul number two, I guess there'll be a continuation of the church's lack of ability to come into the modern world, unfortunately.
Yeah, or deal with things. Well, you know, as long as they think that suffering is cool, suffering people are not going to be that much of a problem.
Well, you know, Bob, now, you've been to the Vatican, I have too. And we've seen it on television, and we've seen the gorgeous processions, the princely robes.
Oh, yes.
The most beautiful statues and frescoes.
The Pietà.
Some of the finest artists who ever lived.
Oh.
And it does not appear to me as though there's a great deal of suffering going on within the confines of the Vatican, even though it's no larger than Central Park.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're right.
And I'm not trying to attack the Catholic Church in any
no,
way.
No, 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 that's not this. No, but I think it's fair to discuss their policies.
And so do I. Because, you know, what's one man's religion is another man's superstition and vice versa, okay?
Sure.
And I'm not calling their religion superstitious or I'm not calling it anything negative, but what I don't understand is how can you take men who do not marry, they do not have the responsibility of doing what you and your wife have done, of getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to diaper a sick child or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or to have its teeth fixed, or to take it to the doctor, or to be sure that it gets a good education. How can you have people who have no experience in married life, in family life, per se, dictate to others what they should do about things like birth control, Planned Parenthood, and things of that nature?
Well, see, that's what happens when you clothe yourself with the authority of God. You know, when you start playing the, well, God told me.
Well, you know, in looking at the Basilica of St. Peter's and the Sistine Chapel and, oh, the whole place is just an absolute paradise on earth. The Ethiopian College, all the places.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes just more than 2 days to even get through half of it, really.
You know what I always wanted, Jim? I always wanted a rugby shirt that looked like the Papal Guard's tunics.
Well,
I think
that's
just that's
and
just
not
neat.
To mention the landscaping and everything,
yeah.
and just the absolute splendor that these people live in, like Renaissance princes.
Well, I mean that's
and it's just so totally inconsistent with a man who was a simple carpenter,
right? Barefoot.
You know, it's kind of like that movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Remember the guy grabs a cup and it's all bejeweled and everything.
Yeah.
Well, he certainly paid the price for that little faux pas, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's not a carpenter's cup.
No, but I mean, you know, this would be the cup of a carpenter, a simple, just not even just a terracotta vessel of that period. But
yeah.
You know, it seems as though that these people. And I've heard them speak of the fact that they don't have to read the Bible, that somebody else does it for them. I have a problem with that, you know?
Yeah, I do. I understand.
And, of course, people can criticize me as being one of God's frozen people because technically the head of my church is the Queen of England. But that's okay, you know. Hey,
yeah.
Like I say, with a voice and a face like mine, I can always drive the cab.
Well, but Jim, in all honesty, what in heaven's name were the Cardinals thinking when they picked an ex-Nazi for the next pope?
Oh, you mean he was affiliated with the party?
He was a member of the Hitler Youth. He's a veteran of the Wehrmacht.
Well, yeah, one of the best teachers I ever had in graduate school was a former member of the Hitler Youth, Peter Becker. And, of course, a lot of these people, you know, you had to join these organizations.
I understand that, but the point I'm getting at is, if this guy is running around complaining about moral relativism, Jim, then...
Well, I mean, look what they did to Kurt Waldheim.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not sure what his particular association was. His was in the Crimea. And was he not in the SS?
Yeah, he was an SS officer.
Well, a little bit of difference between the SS and the Wehrmacht, but anyway, this guy was in the Wehrmacht, right?
Yeah, and I guess what I'm asking is there some line of demarcation? I mean, can we just agree, you know, okay, you were drafted, okay. You had to be in the Hitler Youth, okay. But you were there and you were subject to the indoctrination, and your presence there... kind of eliminate, you know, we like you, it's fine, we'll invite you to the cocktail parties, you know, you can stand in a corner and chuckle about the Jews, whatever, but we're not going to make you pope. You're a Nazi, you can't be pope. That's you know, that's the kind of absolute truth that this guy prattles on about.
Was this man, was he an enlisted man, or was he an officer, or what?
It's my understanding he was an enlisted man. He operated an artillery battery. Maybe an AK-AK battery.
And probably was on the Eastern Front.
No, probably the defense of Berlin. He was I'm not sure. He was captured by American forces and held in an American POW camp, and eventually released, of course.
You know, I have an interesting story to relate. When I first started working for the civil service, I had to go through an intern program starting as a GS-5.
Mm-hmm.
There was an instructor there named Brzezinski, and he had been inducted, but not inducted, but he was from Germany, and he joined the American Occupation Army there. And his father was in the Gestapo. And the stories that that guy used to tell me about what went on during the war was just incredible. And, you know.
Yeah, you know, I had a good friend who was in the an older gentleman. He was in the Hermann Goering division.
Well, they were a pretty tough unit. I think they gave Pat a pretty rough time in Italy, didn't they?
Well, they did. He fought in the Russian campaign. He was part of Operation Barbarossa.
Right.
He had photographs that just showed these little dots going off into the infinity of the background of the photograph. He says, "See, those are Russian prisoners. Those were the good days."
He what now?
He says, "Those little dots, they are the Russian prisoners. Those were the good days." Hmm. And then he went on and he fought under Rommel in the Afrika Korps. And a real gentleman, son of an Anabaptist minister, and drafted. You know, when your country drafts you, you go. I understand all that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, for heaven's sakes, it seems like, you know, be what you are, be the best you can be. You don't get to be Pope. Maybe I'm being unreasonable, Jim.
Well, you know, like I say, I don't. If Mr. Ratzinger were, or Cardinal Ratzinger were, a member of the party and a party functionary, I could have a problem with that. But my problem with him is not over his past, but what he's going to do with the church.
Well, here's one more for you, though.
And like I say, he is just basically extremely doctrinaire and against any type of change.
Well, this is the guy. You remember the big flap, the firestorm of controversy during the last presidential election, Jim?
Yes, sir.
About priests denying John Kerry communion because he supported a woman's right to control her own body.
Right.
This,
he was behind that.
This is the guy that did that. This is the guy that gave that order.
I know that. And that is just absolutely, as far as I'm concerned,
odious?
It's just unforgivable as far as I'm concerned. Because how can you deny the sacraments of the church in this day and age? Basically, he placed that man under some type of interdict.
Yeah.
And, you know, if John Kerry had lived back in the Middle Ages, God only knows what would have followed that.
Oh, he would have been hounded out of town and beaten and thrashed and probably burnt and killed.
And really, that man turned an election in favor of George Bush.
Yeah.
Because it was the Roman Catholics who voted for George Bush and helped put him in the White House and gave us this mess, along with the other people who voted for him, basically have caused us to have this man who's president, for who I really feel is not qualified to be president, nor has he ever been.
Well, you know, Jim, as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's never going to be an American pope, nor should there be. But by the same token, what the College of Cardinals did is they just thumbed their nose at America's Catholic population. They just absolutely thumbed their nose, spat at them, whatever metaphor, simile, analogy you want to use, because for those Catholics who voted for John Kerry, you know, this new pope who has the nerve to take the name Benedict, for them to make him the head of the church just tells America's freedom loving democratic Catholics that, you know, they don't matter.
I know it's bad. Listen, the times of sand are running quite quickly.
Indeed.
I've got one quick thing to tell you.
Sure.
Back in Columbia, they had a school named Benedict College.
Mm-hmm.
It was a black school. This was back in like 1970, and I was invited to go to a football game of theirs. Do you know what their fight song was?
No.
Ben and Arm.
No, stop it. Stop it. You're going to get me in trouble.
I'm not going to.
Oh, but that's a dandy. Thanks, Jim.
Huh?
Thanks. Later. Oh, man. Yeah, you know where it was going, and it was funny. I can always rely on Jim for a good laugh. All right, break time. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. One man is dead following a single vehicle accident in Greenbrier County yesterday morning. Gary Williams Gassman of Rupert was traveling east on I-64 around 5 o'clock when his car crossed the median and hit a guardrail near mile marker 163. The vehicle then left the roadway and traveled 300 feet down an embankment. Gassman was entrapped in the vehicle until emergency personnel removed him. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The accident now under investigation by the Greenbrier County Sheriff's Office. A Scarborough man is headed to prison for sexual assault. Richard Eugene Stover was convicted of two counts of sexually assaulting his girlfriend in August of 2003 in the Pink Creek Road area. On Monday, Circuit Judge Charles Vickers sentenced Stover to two terms of 10 to 25 years in prison on each count. Both sentences will run concurrently. U.S. Airways became the low-cost carrier of all times for a few hours this weekend, selling round-trip flights to some American cities for less than the price of a gallon of gasoline. The Arlington, Virginia-based carrier was selling tickets to smaller cities for $1.86 plus fees. The prices lasted a few hours Saturday until airline officials found and corrected the problem. Most of the fares involved flights into Lebanon, New Hampshire, or Watertown, New York. For the rest of this evening, partly cloudy. Temperatures in the mid-60s now. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low near 50. And then for tomorrow, sort of a repeat of today with temperatures in the low to mid-70s, partly cloudy, and a slight increase of humidity. Then there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms moving in ahead of a cold front tomorrow night, but more likely on Thursday. Showers and thunderstorms, temperatures dropping to the mid-60s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A minimum wage bill that could cut the wages of Wisconsin home care providers passed that state's Senate last week. The bill, written to prevent cities and towns from having a minimum or living wage higher than the state, would also affect contracts and private workers paid through public funds. Robert Craig, political director for SEIU 1199W, says home care workers who currently make $8 or $9 an hour because of living wage laws could see their pay cut.
There's already a workforce crisis in those areas. If you didn't require a living wage, it could get substantially worse.
The Republican-controlled state Senate has been fighting attempts by the governor and state Democrats to raise the state minimum wage from the federal standard of $5.15 per hour. In response, some cities and counties in Wisconsin have begun passing their own increased wage ordinances. The bill now moves on to the House, and then to Governor Jim Doyle, who has pledged a veto unless the anti-living wage ordinance is removed.
Retirees who already have medical insurance that covers prescription drugs are in danger of losing their insurance if the new Equal Employment Opportunity Rule goes into effect. Lou DiBattari heads FAIR, Fairness for Already Insured Retirees. He said the rule would allow companies to drop their benefits for those 65 and over while still insuring younger early retirees, and he's calling for public action on the issue.
What we need to do, the people out in the audience, is write letters to your elected officials asking them to have a bill that grandfathers in those who are 50 or older at the time the bill goes into effect. The EOC rule goes into effect. The people younger than 50 have time to plan their financial so they won't be hurt and we won't be hurt.
DiBattari is using a website, rxfair.com, in an effort to rally already insured retirees to defend their benefits.
More audits are in the stars for labor unions across the country. The Department of Labor says only 206 unions were audited in 2000, compared to the more than 1,000 a decade earlier. The department also cites recent embezzlement cases involving Washington's Teachers Union and President of the Ironworkers as evidence of a need for more labor audits. The AFL-CIO is among the first that will be audited. President John Sweeney calls the audits a payback for Labor's nearly unanimous support of John Kerry in the presidential election.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research, Mississippi has been the worst state for women 4 years in a row. The Institute measures economics, health, politics, and rights to come up with composite scores for women. The best states for women, according to the Institute's 2004 report, are Vermont, Connecticut, Minnesota, and Washington. The report found that while a significant income gap still exists between women and men, the gap narrowed in every state. Virginia had the most improvement, reducing the pay gap from 41.4% to 27.4%. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR, Beckley.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Welcome back. Great music, John. Good job. New bumper music, just freshen things up a little bit. It's about 24 minutes before 8 o'clock. On to other things beyond the papacy. I was wandering around whiterosesociety.org last night. You know, I air check myself when I get home. Always trying to get better and better and better. I mean, just because you're the best doesn't mean there's not room for improvement. But I clicked on one of Ben Burch's banner ads there, a banner ad for the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies. And I went to their website, great website, and started reading some of their stuff. Ran across one story there. And at one point in time, most of us have worked either in some sort of deal with the public capacity, whether it's a convenience store, a hamburger counter, something like that. At some point in time, you go through that process. And because you deal with the public, you know, you try to put on a happy face, you're nice, you're kind, yes, sir, no, ma'am. But there's always a jerk. There is always a jerk. And I remembered my own days as a convenience store clerk one summer. I read this account from a man named Sherry Brown. He lives in the D.C. area. And he's 56 years old. He's an African-American. He's been a community activist for 30 years, since going back to his college days in the 60s. He was feeding 300 kids a day in the Black Panther Party's free breakfast program in Baltimore when he was 21 years old. And until recently, Mr. Brown was a what do they call him at Starbucks? A barista, whatever the hell that is. He worked at Starbucks serving coffee to people and various and sundry other drinks. Well, Starbucks has canned this gentleman. He had a customer who threatened his life. Now, this was back in December. This customer got belligerent with him because in the hustle and crush of serving people, you know, And you know, it's confusing enough when you go to Starbucks. You know, you don't have small, medium, and large. You've got grande, ventilator, and there's, I don't know, carburetor. These bizarre names for the sizes of their beverages. Yeah, give me a big one and let me go. You know, tall. Yeah, that's it. Tall and venti or something. Yeah, whatever. So Mr. Brown's dealing with the public, and it's a Starbucks in D.C., and it's the Capitol Hill Starbucks. You know, it's a lot of the Lark's Vomit canape crowd. Silk suits and Savile Row and hand-tailored Hong Kong shirts. I want a venti mochaccino with little foam. Those types, you know. So this customer gets really nasty, this guy, with Mr. Brown, because he lost track of what it was the guy wanted. And so he asked the shift supervisor to help the customer so he could move on to other patrons. And this jerk starts yelling names at him, screaming, accuses Mr. Brown of being retarded. What's the matter? Are you retarded? You know, apparently this is like a grown-up version of Stewie from The Family Guy. Are you retarded? Rather pitiful, really. And he said that Mr. Brown is the kind of person who makes other people go postal. I am the customer. Don't you know I am always right? And Mr. Brown, being a free American human being, looked at the guy and said, you know, that his comments were offensive. And he said he didn't have to tolerate verbal abuse. And Mr. Brown does not and did not have to tolerate verbal abuse. So twice, Mr. Brown, in an effort to get out of this situation, walks away from his cash register to the back of the store, disengaging from the situation, diffusing this jerk's hot running emotions. And still this guy is yammering on and on and on and on. And he finally screams, this crazed customer, this incivil whatever, "He doesn't know who I am or what I do, and if we take this outside, I will kill him." Yeah. "He doesn't know who I am or what I do, and if we take this outside, I will kill him." That's what the customer said. And Mr. Brown was reasonably put in fear. I mean, that's a crime, what that guy just did. He named a time and a place and an intent, and that's a crime at that point. That's the crime of assault. And finally, Mr. Brown had just about all he could stand. He said, "You're lucky this is going on when I'm working, because if this happened on the street, I would have taken him into a back alley and, you know, shown you a little thing or two." Finally, that shut the jerk up. He was responding to a death threat, for crying out loud. So the day after the incident, he gets a call from the assistant manager. And the assistant manager said, "I heard you told a customer you were going to kick his hindquarters." And Mr. Brown said, "Nah, that's not what I said." And then he explains the whole thing to him. Then the regional director, Felice Torrey, assures him there will be a complete investigation of the incident and promise to consider Mr. Brown's written statement. 2 days go by. There's no investigation. They call him in. They call Mr. Brown into a meeting with the assistant manager. And, well, goodbye. You're fired. Now, I ask you, is that right? That old saw, that tired old maxim, "The customer is always right," is a bunch of hooey. 9 times out of 10, whenever you hear someone say the customer is always right, it's because some customer has been an out-and-out jerk, and that tired old saw is used as a reason for abusing a worker, who finally gets, you know, fed up and says something, as Mr. Brown did. Now, that being the case, did Mr. Brown deserve to lose his job? And what's more, lose the home that he's lived in for 11 years? I submit to you that he didn't. That, in fact, this was just, again, corporate thuggishness. So, I don't go to Starbucks very often. But I can tell you this. I read stuff like, I don't go to Starbucks at all anymore. No. Because, and, you know, I let Starbucks corporate headquarters know this. Dropped them an email. You know, oh, well, they're shaking in their boots. But this is atrocious conduct for a corporation to allow death threats to be levied against its workers and then side with the threatener instead of the person who was threatened. You don't really need that fancy cup of carburetor-sized coffee or whatever that badly, do you? Ugh. They won't return his calls. The termination process through Starbucks' internal mechanism has been a bust. And through all of his career with Starbucks, before that incident, he had never had a single performance issue. Not one. But he gets his life threatened, and they can him for it. What's going on in this country? What is going on in this country? Is there a tipping point? Is there a break point where workers finally stand up and say, not going to tolerate the abuse anymore. Sorry. Well, that's what Mr. Brown has done. I would be curious to see what you think of Mr. Brown's actions. Now, on the phone right now, we have a gentleman, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Good evening, sir.
Hey, Bob. How are you? Sorry about the confusion.
Oh, that's okay. That's all okay. Let me just give a little bit of an introduction, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Mr. Friedman is a whale of a good blogger and has focused in particular or with particular emphasis on the election irregularities issue. Fair statement?
Yeah, fair enough, whether I like it or not. Yeah.
Some are born to greatness and others have greatness thrust upon them.
There you go.
And in particular, you've been following recently the opening of the Baker-Carter Election Commission, right?
Yes, sir.
That happened yesterday.
Yes, it did.
Not exactly impressive.
Well, let's put it this way. The commission is cooked from top to bottom. It starts, of course, with the fact that you've got Jim Baker sitting at the top of this commission as co-chair. Jim Baker, the man who assured that votes would not be counted in the 2000 election,
right,
America's votes would not be counted, is now leading a commission on how to improve inclusion in the electoral process in American democracy. It almost, it kind of blows your mind when you think about it.
Why in heaven's name do you think a decent soul like Jimmy Carter would lend his credibility to this sham?
You know, it's very hard to figure out because, in fact, this commission was formed in secret, and none of us knew about it. I actually co-founded, since I've been reporting on all these election irregularities, an organization called VelvetRevolution.us, which comprises almost 100 real election reform and voting rights groups. None of us knew anything about this commission. None of us were even asked to testify or be on it or anything else. And, you know, the entire thing seems to have been so gamed, really, that, you know, there's no way of telling how it came about, why Jimmy Carter would agree to be on. And we know that, in fact, Baker and a lot of his compatriots at his law firm, who were also involved in the 2000 fiasco,
that would be
as
Baker.
Well as voting machine companies, were actually representatives from voting machine companies are on the commission.
Oh, that's
I
nice.
Mean, the entire thing is so bizarre, so I can't tell you why Jimmy Carter would play along with this.
Well, there was an opening salvo yesterday, or was it the day? Was it yesterday?
Which salvo?
I'm thinking about John Fund.
Yeah.
Now, for people who don't know, John Fund is a former writer, editorialist, or of some sort with the Wall Street Journal. Correct?
Are you sure it's former?
I was hoping it was. Maybe it's not former. What I know him as is a serial woman beater.
Well, really?
Yeah, yeah. The John Fund is a real beauty.
Okay.
He has regaled the world with right-wing moral high ground garbage and then, you know, like to smack the girlfriend around a little bit.
Well, I don't know about that. I'll let you stand by that one.
Okay.
Not that it didn't happen. I just don't know anything
about
it.
Yeah, and
but
that's
I do know,
past his prologue. But what he did.
Well, indeed. And I do know that he is now, of course, a regular contributor to the Fox News Channel, where he was speaking with Brett Hume last night about what he had to say at these hearings. Essentially, the hearings really made a mockery of the election reform movement and of all the election irregularities that have been documented, and there have been thousands since November. Almost all the folks who testified yesterday managed to changed the idea of election reform. Somehow that all morphed into voter fraud, voter registration fraud, and in John Fund's case, he was even talking about provisional voter fraud for provisional folks who cast provisional ballots.
Mm-hmm. And the part that just jumped screaming off the page at me when I read your site, Brad, was the line about in dealing with the provisional ballots, how poll workers should be able to tell, what's the exact line?
Actually, I have it here. It's pretty amazing. Well, because what they did was they tried to get, they're clearly, everyone was talking about photo ID, you know, they all suggest that there's all this epidemic of voter fraud, none of which has been documented, mind you, but that's become the problem. So in Fund's case, he said, I think we could prevent possible provisional voting fraud if we keep the provisional voting as much as possible in the precinct where in which the voter is assigned, because the election officials are more likely to know whether they can allow the persons, whether the residence is a real residence and whether or not the person, here we go, looks as if they belong in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So you decide what that means and how the poll workers...
What's that black person doing here?
That's what I read. There you go.
Jim,
and really, that's what this photo ID business is about, because my understanding is that some 10% of the electorate does not have photo IDs because they, and as it turns out, they're in minority areas, big cities that tend to vote Democratic because, you know, for example, in Manhattan, you know, how many people have driver's license that live in Manhattan?
Right. Who needs one?
Right. So this nonsense about photo ID, I'm almost loath to even discuss it because it plays on, you know, it allows them to set the agenda and allows some phony straw man argument about whether photo ID is needed when, in fact, there is no epidemic of voter fraud. What we have, however, is thousands and thousands of cases and incidents of voters being disenfranchised, voters not being able to vote, thousands of votes appearing on electronic voting machines out of nowhere, thousands of votes disappearing on electronic machines. Those are the real problems that we need to talk about.
Well, sure, and people being, when you talk about disenfranchisement, we talked about it during the election cycle, and I had people who were calling this show and were incredulous, and frankly thought I was making it up, that there might be, say, a polling place where three or four different precincts were contained in the same room.
Right.
And if you cast your vote, say, you know, you're supposed to vote at precinct 3, and you go to the precinct 41 machine,
yep,
you just got disenfranchised.
Yep. I mean, and that happened in Ohio. Mind you, in Ohio, had 60,000 votes been recorded for Kerry instead of George Bush, you know, out of, I think it's 8 million or something votes in Ohio. Out of that number, had 60,000 gone for Kerry instead of Bush, Kerry would be the president now. Yet, thousands of votes were thrown away, provisional ballots were thrown away, because the voter would put the provisional ballot at the wrong table in the right building. Because, as you said, there was, you know, three or four different precincts in the same building, and those votes were all summarily thrown out, never counted, and, you know, voters had no idea because the poll workers didn't even know to explain to these people. They were not trained to say, hey, you have to put it in the right bucket.
Well, it's not like, I guess there are some who would say that we're talking about some sort of conspiracy theory, Brad. I don't think that is where we're going. These are documented incidents.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not a conspiracy theory that in the Gahanna 1B precinct in Ohio, in Franklin County, where 637 voters voted that day. Out of those 637 voters, how many votes do you imagine George W. Bush received?
Was this the place where he got 6,000 votes?
Yeah, over 4,000 votes George W. Bush out of 630 that were cast.
Yeah.
And that was not discovered by election officials or the media. That was actually discovered by folks like myself, internet bloggers, folks who were poring over the numbers saying, wait, something's not right here because these numbers do not match up with the exit polls, which are always right everywhere else but America, including in the Ukraine, when the same company, it was actually the Mitofsky Edison company that ran the polls in the Ukraine, they came out and said that the challenger should have won, according to the exit polls, but the final results showed the challenge showed the incumbent winning. Well, in that case, when that happened, George Bush and Colin Powell came out and said, well, look, it's fraud. It's clearly shown by the exit polls not matching up with the final results. The same damn thing happened in America and by the same company, and yet in that case it was a problem. The exit polls were wrong, not the final results, inexplicably, and frankly, the corporate media turned the other way and didn't bother to report any of these numbers that so many of us have now, an increasingly large movement, are yelling and screaming about and saying, hey, look, guys, pay attention to the franchise. Pay attention to the democracy. These are not conspiracy theories. These are documented, provable, confirmable pieces of evidence, you know, that you can check with the boards of election.
Brad, we've got to go to our top of the hour news break.
Yeah.
Can you stay with us? I'd like to move this a little bit into a question. I'd like you to explain to people a little bit about Clint Curtis.
Okay.
Can you hang with us?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Thanks so much. We'll be back to you. We're talking with Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. He has been tireless in trying to sort out to call them election irregularities is to use a form of English that's almost too mild. We're talking about election fraud here, the verified real election fraud. Look here, it's happened again. Oh, it's Florida all over. Yeah, it is. So we're going to take our top of the hour news break from ABC, and then we'll come back and talk some more with Brad Friedman. You're listening to News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hi, I'm Chris Freeman, a 2002 Olympian and the number one cross-country skier in the nation, and a proud member of the U.S. Ski Team. I'm also one of millions of Americans living with diabetes, and the spokesman for the Lilly for Life Awards, a national awards program that recognizes people with diabetes or people within the diabetes community who have accomplished outstanding success. Are you one of those people, or do you know someone you want to nominate? For more information, call toll-free 888-545-5115.
According to research from the Star Debit and ATM Network, one in six people are victims of identity theft. And the newest scam is phishing, spelled P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Be on guard. Visit phishinginfo.org to learn more. A message from the National Consumers League.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. You can depend on us. News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
You two are real actors, huh?
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Just during dinner for the next few years.
There's no substitute for a loving parent.
According to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Okay, I guess.
Is that the best you can do?
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel, dealing with a mixture of clouds and clear sky from here on out. Into late night, 53 will be the low. Sunshine, a few passing clouds expected on Wednesday, but a dry 73. so a little bit cooler than we were on Tuesday. Thursday's weather, well, chance of thunderstorms, 50% to be exact, with a high in the mid-60s. And looking into Friday's forecast, the risk of thunderstorms and showers hanging around exists as well.
WWNR, Beckley.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and we're chatting with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, a voting fraud specialist by any definition of the term. I think it's fair to say, given the investigative hours that he's put into what used to be our ostensibly free and fair election process. You still with us, Brad?
I am indeed.
You mentioned, before we went to the break, you mentioned hating to go into an issue because it was almost like allowing them to set the terms of the debate, to frame the debate. And I think in large part, part and parcel of this problem is that we've already done that insofar as every election debate that I run across or discussion focuses on which corporate-controlled election company we're going to allow to build the machines, make the machines, install the machines, as opposed to the fundamental debate of why are we doing this? Is that fair?
Right. I mean, make no mistake. The good guys in this fight are definitely playing catch-up constantly. I mean, when the Baker-Carter Commission we were talking about in the last hour was sort of announced out of nowhere, you know, that it was already set in stone. They had the guys who were going to sit on top of that, and they were voting machine representatives and everything else. And, you know, now it's a matter of guys like me trying to play catch-up. We did, however, catch them a little bit earlier than usual this time because of some reporting I did on this phony voting rights group called the American Center of Voting Rights that claimed to be a nonpartisan group. They came out of nowhere on March 17th. 3 days later, they testified before a U.S. congressional hearing, 3 days after they, you know, anybody had ever heard about them at all. And, in fact, they are comprised of the National General Counsel for Bush Cheney 04, Inc. Communications Director for the RNC. So we, however, did catch them that time coming out of the box. But you're right. With these voting machine companies, they're all, you know, controlled by hard right partisans. And the question of whether we should have them at all is, you know, if it was up to me, we wouldn't. We'd have paper and pencil. But the
Thank
fact
you.
Of the matter is that millions of dollars has now been set aside to go to these companies via the Help America Vote Act. And what I'm trying to help get done at VelvetRevolution.us, an organization I helped co-found, is at least if we're going to be voting on these machines, let's ensure that there's a paper ballot created with every vote cast, and that the hardware and software is opened up for inspection, not proprietary. Right now it's proprietary, and when you go to vote on an electronic voting machine, you may as well tell me who you want to vote for, and I will go in and in secret record your vote, and you'll simply trust that I'll do it accurately.
Yeah,
That's what we're asked to do every time we vote with an electronic voting machine, because we have no idea, no clue whether our votes are being counted accurately.
Well, Brad, you mentioned paper and pencil or pen, and that just overjoyed me.
Yeah.
Because, among other things, now, here in West Virginia, in the last election cycle, oddly enough, the first county to have its all precincts counted and its returns to the state capitol was the lone county, oddly enough, that still uses paper ballots.
They were the first ones to have their votes returned?
They were the first ones with their returns in. Their returns were the most accurate.
My understanding is up in Canada, and I don't know Canada's system as well as I know America's, but my understanding is they use all paper and pencil, and their voting returns are in within 45 minutes after the polls close. So it can be done, but you know the system that we're dealing with. You know that it's all about money right now, and that millions of dollars goes to the politicians from these voting companies. And that, in return, the thanks they get is even more millions go back to the voting companies through this legislation. And it's like a tsunami, frankly, trying to hold it back. So, at VelvetRevolution.us, we are trying at least to, fight the fights that we believe we can win. It's almost, for the moment, I think, impossible to stop these, the avalanche of these voting machine, of these voting machines. So if they're going to be there, I think we can all agree, if you have to use them, at least let's make them, verifiable and accountable. Well, you know, wasn't it Reagan who said trust but verify?
Oh, yes, I remember that well.
We would like to, verify that our votes are counted accurately. I mean, hell, it's only democracy we're talking about. It's only the most important element of democracy that we're talking about, which is the vote.
Well, you talk about picking your fights, and I certainly understand that philosophy, Brad. Is there a difference between, say, the national fight and, say, things that people can do on a local level? Are there localized things that people can do?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are things that folks can do everywhere, and I got to tell you, I am probably the perfect example of one voice that does make a difference. I've been making a lot of noise, as you've noticed, as you've pointed out, and frankly, I'm not an activist. I'm not a journalist. I'm just a guy. I'm a guy with a blog. I'm a citizen, you know?
Yeah.
And I have no business being in the middle of the stuff that I'm in the middle of, but I was willing to look around, you know, see these extraordinary things and write about them on the blog and make noise about them. And I would encourage your listeners, you know, when you hear, for example, we're pointing folks towards velvetrevolution.us where they can send email to the Baker Carter Commission demanding Baker steps down, where we demand that the voting machine companies open up their hardware and software and include paper ballots. When you hear that, go do it. Go send those emails. Trust me, it drives those folks crazy to get avalanches of emails from people. So you can do that. You can write letters to your editor, to your local newspaper. Pay attention what is going on the local level, you know, on your local election boards. Volunteer to be election workers. Those things really do make a difference, and I think that a lot of Americans out there feel like, I'm just one guy, there's nothing I can do that will make a difference. It does make a difference. And, you know, the bad guys win when you decide that that it doesn't make a difference, when you don't do anything.
Now,
do something. Make noise.
Exactly. There are, you know, I've been following this since 2000, and there is something that you hit on some time back, like I said, during the previous election cycle. There is a reason to worry about these machines, and that was a lot of that was brought forward in your exclusive exposure of the assertions of one Clint Curtis. Can you share that story with us, Brad?
Sure. I'm speaking of one guy, one voice that can make a difference, and Clint Curtis has been trying and yelling and screaming about his story for about 4 years, and finally it's seems like we're starting to get some traction to get the news out there of what happens, what happened, what he claims in a sworn affidavit happened, what he testified in sworn testimony before members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee happened. It's on video. It's at bradblog.com. You can check it out. Essentially, Curtis's story is that he was working at a software firm down in Oviedo, Florida, back in 2000 by the name of Yang Enterprises, Inc. At the time, Yang's corporate counsel and registered lobbyist was a man by the name of Tom Feeney. Well, Tom Feeney also happened to be the Speaker of the Florida House, and your listeners may recall him from 2000. He's the fellow who said that he didn't care what the Supreme Court did during that election mess in 2000. He was going to make sure that Florida's electors went to George W. Bush. Feeney is also was the running mate to Jeb Bush when Jeb first ran for governor back in 94. So he's closely tied to the Bushes, and now Feeney sits on the U.S. Congress in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. Basically, what Curtis claims is that Feeney came to the company where Feeney was working and asked him to to create what essentially was a vote-rigging software prototype. He was very specific what he wanted. He wanted, he had to have three things. It had to be usable on touchscreen machines. It had to not require any additional equipment like a keyboard, etc. And it had to be, the routines had to be hidden in the source code. They had to be invisible so that when folks looked at the source code, they would not see these vote flipping routines.
Okay,
now,
explain vote flipping, please.
Yeah, well, what he was asking him to do, and essentially Clint Curtis is a Republican, was a Republican at the time, as was Feeney, and gave the impression that he was concerned that Democrats would try to rig the vote with these electronic machines, and that he wanted to see how they might do it so they would know what to look out for, essentially. Well, so the program that he was asking was to him to create was essentially something that you could touch some buttons on the screen, and if the candidate you wanted to win was already winning, then it essentially wouldn't do anything. But if the candidate you wanted to lose was ahead, then what it would do is it would flip the votes. It would give 51% to your candidate and 49% to all of the other candidates, and it would essentially be divided up in the same proportion that all the other candidates had before the flip occurred.
Okay.
So he went away. He went to build this program at the company, came back the next day. It was a very simple program. I mean, it's quite easy. You know, we're talking about voting programs, essentially, you know, add one plus one. It's
yeah.
not all that complicated. He came back with a program that would do exactly this, gave it to his CEO, the CEO of the company, Mrs. Yang, on a CD, and said, look, I was able to do everything you wanted, except I can't hide the vote flipping routines in the software. If anybody is to examine the source code for the software, they will see these routines. And the CEO said to him at the time, well, Mrs. Yang said to him, you don't understand. In order to get the contract, we have to hide the routines in the source code. This program is needed to control the vote in South Florida.
God. Just told him.
Yes, sir.
This is, we're fixing the election. Now within a time frame, when are we talking about, Brad?
Well, this was just prior to the meeting took place. I believe it was either late September or early October, according to Curtis's affidavit, of 2000. So it was just prior to the 2000 election.
And when he delivered the CD to Mrs. Yang, what did Mrs. Yang do with it?
At that point, we don't know. All he knows is Curtis gave it to her, and she, you know, took it. She was disappointed that he couldn't hide the source code. And the routines in the source code, and away it went, presumably to be delivered to Tom Feeney, but Curtis doesn't know, of course, whether it was or wasn't.
Now, Yang Enterprises went on to have their own problems, didn't they?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, Clint Curtis left the company because of that meeting, which made him very uncomfortable, and others like it, where he was seeing Chinese illegal Chinese aliens working at this company inserting wiretapping modules into top secret software that they had contracts with NASA. They still have contracts with NASA, by the way. And he went away and eventually got a new job at the Florida Department of Transportation, found that Yang was overbilling the Florida Department of Transportation because they had a contract there. He went and reported all of these things to the Inspector General's office at the DOT in Florida, talked about the illegal aliens, which would be against the contract for them to you know, to have an illegal alien working on a DOT contract. He reported that. He reported the overbilling and so forth. And in fact, some, I'd say 80, 85, 90% of the claims that he had made at the time back in 2001 have since been borne out. That illegal alien, a fellow by the name of Henry Nee,
mm-hmm.
was in fact charged with, was arrested after a four-year sting by Homeland Security Department, charged with three counts of attempting to send Hellfire anti-tank missile chips to China.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, and in fact, he pled guilty to one of those charges, and in the plea agreements, and again, I have, you know, the court documents, and, you know, I work from evidence, not from speculation.
Right.
I have the court documents up and online, and Nee is quoted in the plea agreement as saying, it was a slow year, so we only did this 10 to 20 times in the last year. Now, he pled guilty in October of 2004, and for these charges, Mr. Nee was sentenced, get ready, to 3 years probation and a $100 fine.
Did we send him home?
No, sir. He still lives in Oviedo, Florida.
Ow.
And he's still illegal. He's been an illegal alien since January 1 of 2000.
Now, you talk about working from evidence, Brad.
Yeah.
Is there any other reasonable interpretation than that this is just pure dirt? I mean, this is just filthy business from top to bottom. Is there some way of saying, well, this is a misunderstanding?
Well,
have you found that?
Well, I'll tell you what Tom Feeney said, who, as I say, now sits on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. What Tom Feeney and Yang and their attorneys all say is that Clint Curtis is completely full of it, that he's a liar, that he has no proof for these election rigging charges that he's talking about, and indeed, we're still digging and trying to find proof, because right now it's sort of a he said situation. There were other people in that meeting, but none of those people, one of them was Mrs. Yang, the CEO, none of them are willing to talk. Mrs. Yang's executive secretary, Mike Cohen, won't talk, and in fact, after years at the Yang company, he's now been, and as he was the spokesman, as a matter of fact, if you went to their website, it said, you know, for information, call Mike Cohen. He's been moved out of the headquarters and sort of buried out at NASA, where you can't get in touch with him. He won't talk about what's going on. They all deny. They all say Curtis is a liar, but guess what? Last month, Clint Curtis took a polygraph test and apparently passed with flying colors, as reported in the St. Petersburg Times.
But, you know, interestingly, and this we talk a little bit on this show, Brad, about the so-called liberal media.
Right. What liberal media?
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Now, is it just because we didn't happen to be watching that Friday night when this was all over NBC and ABC and CBS and the rest of the alphabet soup? I mean, this has been covered in detail, right?
No, sir. Not only was it not on ABC, NBC, CBS, it has hardly been anywhere. Now, when I reported this story originally on December 6, 2004, I got calls from, you know, everyone from New York Times to 60 Minutes to Newsweek and everybody else. They were interested in this explosive story. They talked to Clint, and, well, I guess we're still waiting for their reports on it to come out. And I can't explain it. I have some theories about why it hasn't been covered in the mainstream, and it sort of came about not long after the Dan Rathergate business, and I think that put a chill on a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a very aggressive group of folks. As a matter of fact, some of the papers that have reported it, Seminole Chronicle, Tom Feeney's hometown paper, reported it, and what they basically reported was what was in Curtis's affidavit and what was in his a testimony to U.S. House Judiciary Committee. This was a lawsuit threat from Feeney, and then in the next week they received identical threat, almost virtually identical threat of a lawsuit from Yang's attorneys, who, by the way, of course, Yang's attorneys used to be Feeney's old law partner.
Right.
So they were threatened with a lawsuit simply for reporting what happened, which, and then you have to question, well, why has Feeney never threatened to sue Clint Curtis himself? He is the one, after all, making these charges if they're untrue.
Well, if he's a lawyer, he understands that truth is an absolute defense in a case like that.
Right.
And so I think it's suffice to say that those suits have not been filed?
Those suits have not been filed. Curtis has never been threatened with a suit because, in fact, I think Curtis would welcome it and the process of discovery that would come along with it and the information that Yang and Feeney and everyone else would have to come out. I think there's nothing more that Curtis would like than to have Tom Feeney under under oath in a deposition where he's got to answer to some of these questions.
Has he demonstrated any ability, and I mean, this is an open-ended question.
Yeah.
Has he demonstrated any ability to recreate the program as he created it for Yang?
Yeah, actually, he did, and he created what is essentially a mock-up. I think he's got it up at a website of his, justaflyonthewall.com. And he has demonstrated it to folks and how it works and how simple it would be to do something like this. You know, a lot of folks have said, well, if he really made this program, why didn't he take a copy with him? If he, you know, was uncomfortable, felt it was illegal, why didn't he take a copy with him? Well, in fact, anyone who's ever worked at a company like that, it's a secure building with top secret, you know, secure contracts. You do not leave the building with software that you created on.
You can't get out of one of those buildings with a Twinkie they don't want you to leave with.
Exactly. So, but he has recreated the program. It's, you know, really kind of a no-brainer. I mean, I think there's about 24 lines of code total that are required to flip the votes the way that he did. You could see it. And, you know, mind you, he's willing to talk about it. He's, talks to really any media who wants to hear from him. I'm sure he'd be, thrilled to come on your show if you want to give him some tough questions. I can't tell you right now, as I say, whether those voting charges are absolutely true. But what I can tell you is when I started reporting this story, it was so explosive. I had guys from the right and from the media and everywhere else said, look, Brad, if one piece of his story is proven untrue, then you have to discount the rest of the story. And I thought, well, okay, I'm not sure about that, but I'll play by those rules if you insist. Since I reported this originally 6 months ago, I have yet to be able to find a hole in his story. As I said, more things have proven true than not. Nothing has proven untrue. About 85% of it has been proven true, whereas every time Tom Feeney or Yang or their attorneys open their mouth, they say something that is demonstrably untrue. Yang, for example, is still insisting that Henry Nee, or Henry the Spy, as Clint Curtis calls him,
right,
never worked at their company. Now, when they first said that, I went ahead and posted over at bradblog.com the several weekly time reports on Yang stationery that were given to submitted to Florida Department of Transportation, signed by Henry Nee, showing in fact that Nee worked there 40 to 60 hours a week. A report by the Florida Inspector General's office just came out in February, of course, confirming that Nee did work there and confirming in fact that he was an illegal alien. So, I mean, everything they say has been has proven to be demonstrably untrue, not everything, but so many things. And I just wonder, does that same standard apply to them?
No.
Folks were suggesting I had to apply to Clint Curtis. If one part of their story is untrue, does that mean they're lying in all other respects?
No, that only applies to our side.
What's that?
That only applies to our side.
Yeah, there you go. It only applies to one side. The standards are not the same.
The sauce is for the goose and not for the gander.
Indeed.
Well,
and, I don't know if you have time here. I could toss in one other bizarre element of the story that will blow you away about Lemmy, the Inspector General, to whom Clint Curtis first went with these charges.
Can you hold through one more break?
You bet.
Okay. Brad, I'm really enjoying this. I hope we're not taking up too much of your time because I know you're trying to get the story out as much as you possibly can.
I'm thrilled to have it get out there any way we can.
Okay. Well, hold through this break and we'll come back. Thanks again. We're talking with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, this is wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat stuff. This is the gun to the head of democracy that we're dealing with right now. And, you know, go look for yourself. Go to velvetrevolution.us, go to bradblog.com, read this stuff. You're hearing it from the author, from the person who's done the investigating. See it with your own eyes. Get all Doubting Thomas about it. Brad's not afraid for you to do that. Go ahead. Go look at Clint Curtis's website, justaflyonthewall.com, and see if you come away comfortable. In the meantime, we've got to take our bottom-of-the-hour break, a little news update from Carl Mack, followed by Jim Hightower's nightly commentary. Then we'll come back and carry on with this. This is News Talk 620, WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Discount retailer Target Corporation will no longer allow unfettered access to cold medicines that are used to make the illegal stimulant methamphetamine. Target stores nationwide will pull many cold, allergy, and cough remedies from the shelf and sell them only from pharmacy counters. The restrictions apply to all over-the-counter drugs containing pseudoephedrine, including children's medicine, tablets, liquids, and gel caps. A number of states are following the example of Oklahoma, where restrictions on sales of some cold medicines were followed by a dramatic drop in the number of meth lab seizures. A bill that passed the legislature this month would restrict customers to 3 packages a month of the dozen or so cold medicines that are using pseudoephedrine as a solo active ingredient. State regulators have stopped issuing new consent orders and settlement agreements while the State Department of Environmental Protection reviews the way it handles them. DEP spokeswoman Jessica Greathouse says agency secretary Stephanie Timmermeyer was concerned that environmental violations were not being handled consistently across the agency's various divisions. The DEP often settles cases by working out deals for companies to fix environmental problems and pay negotiated fines. Massey Energy has completed construction of a primary care medical center in Madison. The coal operator has leased the facility to an independent physician group, which opened it on April 11th. The facility is being operated as the West Virginia Family Wellness Center. Once fully staffed, it will be available to all residents of the Boone County community of Madison. And Charleston is the test site for a U.S. Army 3-year reserve enlistment option. Recruits who choose that option will serve 3 years in a selected reserve troop program unit and the remainder of their 8-year military obligation in the individual ready reserve. For this evening, partly cloudy, mid-60s now. For tonight, partly cloudy, upper 40s to around 50. Tomorrow, same weather pattern, partly sunny, a little bit more humid tomorrow. Temperatures low to mid-70s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Friday, April 29th, a who's who of leadership training comes together for the Maximum Impact Simulcast, the most powerful leadership event of 2005. Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski, motivational expert Brian Tracy, Florida State head football coach Bobby Bowden, best-selling authors Patrick Lencioni, Michael Gerber, Marcus Buckingham, and John Maxwell, America's foremost authority on leadership. Don't miss this unforgettable day of leadership development. Friday, April 29th.
Coming to the Raleigh County Armory Civic Center. For tickets, call 255-4600.
Well, well, George W. is getting a political comeuppance and is coming from a place he least expected, conservatives. At issue is his enthusiasm for the liberty-busting USA Patriot Act, a little shop of autocratic horrors that the Bushites rammed through Congress under cover of the 9/11 terrorist attack. Several of its most intrusive anti-democratic provisions expired this year, and Bush has made their renewal a top priority. These provisions include sneak and peek secret searches by the FBI of people's homes and computers, the secret raiding of libraries and medical offices to grab people's records, and a definition of terrorist that is so broad that it includes citizens who simply protest government policy. Fortunately for America, there are some real conservatives who balk at such a dangerous extension of autocratic police power, even if it's imposed by Bushite Republicans masquerading as conservatives. Libertarian-minded Republicans such as Bob Barr, Paul Weyrich, and Grover Norquist have now joined such liberal advocates for liberty as the ACLU in an Oddfellow coalition to battle the Bushites. Called Patriots to Restore Checks and Balances, the coalition is rallying grassroots opposition to the renewal of the most offensive parts of the perversely named Patriot Act. The grassroots need little rallying, however, for they're already on the move. Montana, for example, is in the forefront of a red state rebellion against Bush's intrusive police powers. Montana lawmakers have overwhelmingly approved a strong resolution criticizing Bush's Patriot Act, uniting Republican legislators with Democrats. Civil liberties are a bipartisan issue in Montana, said a Republican state representative who led the House effort to pass the resolution by a vote of 88-12. This is Jim Hightower saying, we can't take liberty for granted. To fight the Bushites' grab for more police power, call the coalition, 1-800-583-9122.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
WWNR Beckley.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 23 minutes before 9 o'clock here at News Talk 620. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. An ongoing conversation with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com and velvetrevolution.us about voting irregularities that he has investigated and uncovered, reaching back to before the 2000 election. Brad, thanks for staying with us.
You betcha.
You were going to add another link to this sordid little chain when we had to take our break.
Yeah, well, on this Clint Curtis story, just to catch folks up a bit, the software programmer who claims that he was asked by U.S. Congressman Tom Feeney to create vote rigging software, he went with these claims to the Florida Inspector General's office after he left Yang Enterprises Inc., where Feeney was the corporate counsel and registered lobbyist, even while he was the Florida Speaker of the House. No conflict there.
No.
So he reported this, all of this and the Chinese spies and the overbilling that Yang was doing from his contract to the Florida, the Inspector General at the Florida Department of Transportation, a fellow by the name of Raymond Lemmy. That was in May of 2001. A few months later, Clint Curtis and another whistleblower at the Florida Department of Transportation, who also filed complaints about Yang's overbilling, they were both summarily fired without explanation on the same day. They both filed whistleblower suits and essentially won, but Curtis nonetheless was not able to get his job back because his paperwork was filed a day late or something like that.
Yeah.
And you move the ball now 2 years down the road to mid-June 2003. Clint Curtis is now working at a 99-cent store down in Florida. He has Raymond Lemmy, the Inspector General guy, has been working on the case all of this time, talking to Curtis periodically, asking him questions and updating him on the progress of the report. Comes into the store and tells him, well, guess what? You're going to be very happy with the results of this report. I've tracked the corruption all the way to the top. And so keep your ears open. The report will be coming out in the next few weeks. This was mid-June 2003. On July 1, 2003, Inspector General Raymond Lemmy was found dead in a Valdosta, Georgia motel room. He was working down in Tallahassee, Florida, so what he was doing in Georgia, we don't know. The police ruled it a suicide, and I asked Clint at the time that he first told me about this, well, what the heck was Lemmy doing in Georgia? Valdosta is like a... It's the first sort of major town across the Georgia border. He said, well, in Georgia, there's no mandatory autopsy laws. Had he committed suicide in Florida, there would have been a mandatory autopsy. But because he committed suicide in Georgia, there was no autopsy necessary. And, in fact, Ray Lemmy was cremated without a proper medical forensic examination and no autopsy. So the police report rules it a suicide, says that they took photographs of the crime scene, but due to a, quote, failure in the camera's flash memory cards, there would be no photographs from the scene. Well, guess what we posted about a month ago at bradblog.com?
The scene photos?
The scene photos, the crime scene photos that didn't exist. Unfortunately, the shots of Ray Lemmy in the bathtub, and unfortunately, there is loads of information in those photographs and in the police report that just don't sync up at all.
Any reference to, say, the FBI, Homeland Security, any of those, any interest out of them?
Not that I know of. And now Curtis has been yelling and screaming about all of this stuff.
Who gave the cremation order?
I presume it was the family. I've spoken with some members of the family. There's a difference of opinion about whether this was a suicide or not. I believe at the time, though, they had no idea what Lemmy might have been working on. However, his wife, Marianne, says in the police report that he had been under a lot of stress because he had been working on a big case. I've recently had another witness who knew Lemmy come forward to me, and I have yet to report it yet, who said that she was told the same thing by Raymond Lemmy, that he was in the middle of a, quote, big case. Now, you know, I don't know what we can make of all of that, other than, you know, you have to wonder why all of these discrepancies, why they said there was no photographs, and then in fact there were, and the Valdosta police have since confirmed that, of course, the photographs are legitimate, why there are things that don't match in the photograph, why Ray Lemmy writes a suicide note that was one of these sort of generic notes, you know, I love my family, I'm depressed, I can't take it anymore, I love you, Marianne, and then he doesn't even sign the note, much less he had one daughter who was about to be married in 2 months, and everybody that I've spoken to about it said that, you know, all he did was talk about his he had only one child, she was a daughter, talked about her getting married in September. He doesn't even bother to mention her by name in the note. There's all kinds of other discrepancies. There's a check-in receipt for June 29th, when in fact Ray Lemmy was actually in Tallahassee. So what the heck
he was doing, how he could be in
Georgia checking into this motel room is a mystery.
He checked into the motel when he wasn't there.
The Georgia police, I'm sorry?
He checked into the motel room when he was in Tallahassee.
Correct, yeah. And in fact, the police, Valdosta police confirmed, in fact, that last December they reopened the Raymond Lemmy case due to, quote, interest on the Internet. They then spoke, as they told me, with someone at the Florida Department of Transportation and closed the case shortly thereafter. They won't tell me who they talked to. As a matter of fact, they won't talk to me at all anymore.
Beautiful.
Has
anyone, you or anyone else, made any efforts toward, for instance, FOIAing the Florida DOT?
Well, yeah, actually, you can get some of that information. You don't even need to file a FOIA. They have a very good sunshine law in Florida where pretty much all you got to do is call a public agency and say, I am making a public records request for such and such, and they have to give it to you. So that's been one of the reasons it's been, I don't want to say easy, but it's made reporting on this case a little bit easier because it's fairly easy to get at a lot of this hard documentation to see it for yourself.
Well, I'm wondering about the big case, and you know, it goes all the way to the top. You know, was there a Wang file or a Yang file rather?
Yang. Well, yeah, there was that report that Lemmy was working on that, in fact, came out in February of 2005. Mind you, it was filed originally. It was began by Lemmy in May of 2001. So it took about 4 or 5 years, and as I said, it came out, and it says that Yang overbilled by about anywhere from $300,000 to $800,000, depending on how you look at it. Yang would not let them do a proper audit, so the report was stamped as inconclusive in the end. But it demanded that they repay some $300,000.
It confirmed, in fact, what Cliff Curtis had been saying, that an illegal alien had been working at Yang, that he was arrested for spying on the United States of America. So it confirmed all of that. Didn't have anything about the election rigging and the stuff that might, quote-unquote, go all the way to the top. That was not in the report.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And one question, and I'm jumping around with you, and I know you're tired, and I apologize.
Sure.
Going back to the vote flipping program.
Yeah.
Has any comparison ever been made with the results of the South Florida balloting as compared with the way that Clint Curtis describes the way the vote flipping would work? Does that make, is that a sensible question? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
I think I do, and yeah, I have not been able to go through and sort of do a precinct by precinct check of this, because in fact, you know, the program that he was working on would have, I think, flipped it at the precinct level. I do know that the numbers, both in Florida and then as we've seen recently in Ohio, were very similar to that 51-49% result that Curtis has, you know, that he had programmed into his prototype. But, you know, again, mind you, we don't know what came of that software. We don't know if it was ever used.
Right.
All we know is that Curtis has alleged that essentially Tom Feeney and Yang conspired to create election fraud software.
Was this, just out of curiosity, was this on an ES&S machine or a Diebold, or do we know which?
No, well, no, we don't know any of that, because, in fact, the program that Curtis made was simply a prototype. It was created in Visual Basic, which is a programming language.
Right.
Now, I know that Diebold actually uses a similar software, Microsoft software, that VB script, Visual Basic script, would have worked quite nicely in. They use simple Windows Access database software on their highly complicated voting software that they won't let anybody inspect because it's proprietary. So it well could have been used or something like it, but there's right now there's no way to know. And frankly, we're not getting any help from the media, who should be looking into this, who should be investigating it, from the politicians, who should be investigating this. Instead, it's just little old me and a bunch of other people who are interested in the story who have been doing digging. And you know, in fact, I'm encouraged, though, because the story is getting out there now. The Miami Herald spoke about it recently in an article on, as you say, election irregularities. They talked about Clint Curtis's claims. The Wisconsin Capital Times, Madison, Wisconsin Capital Times, discussed it. So it's getting out there, but boy, it's been a long road. I've been at it for 6 months, and Clint Curtis, hell, he's been at it for 4 years. So,
and you guys aren't the only ones hitting the stone wall, though. Congressman John Conyers, I mean, a man of significant prestige on Capitol Hill.
Yep.
This Carter Baker Commission has, for all intents and purposes, slammed the door in his face, have they not?
Yeah, they sure have. I mean, here's the man. His office put out 102 pages of evidence, of sourced, you know, confirmed, footnoted evidence on what went wrong in Ohio in November of 2004. 102 pages of evidence. He was not invited to be on the commission. He was not invited to testify before the commission. His information... the 102 pages of evidence, I don't know if the commission ever had it or not, and frankly, he is hopping mad, not about not being included in the commission, but the way this thing seems to have been created in secret, the way the hearings, the first one was yesterday, seemed to turn it all from, you know, election fraud into voter fraud,
yeah,
and really just seems to be a whitewash, and frankly, a whitewash with racist undertones at that. He put out an extraordinary item. I don't know if you caught it last night on the Conyers on conyersblog.us, where, boy, I mean, he really took this commission to task. And he seems to be hopping mad, and my understanding is he's going to try to meet with someone in the commission and see if he can figure out what the heck is going on. He is, yeah, he's the second longest member serving member of the House.
Yeah.
He's the head of the minority, the ranking member of the minority side of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. And for him to be completely shut out is remarkable. The commission said, it, when asked why he was shut out, they their quote, I think, was, it was a missed opportunity.
Well, bless my soul.
Yeah.
Just one, and boy, I sure do appreciate the time you spent with us, Brad. Who created the commission? Where what was the enabling legislation? What where was the holy writ from on high?
There was none. There was no legislation. This commission was formed privately. We're still in the process of trying to figure out who the heck created it, who's paying for it, whose idea it was, who decided who would sit on this commission. This whole thing, frankly, stinks to high heaven.
Well, I noticed one
story. Stop by rawstory.com. They had a terrific expose late last week on this commission, on the formation, on the characters that are sitting on this commission and who are testifying before it. It's, you know, once again, they're out ahead, the back ahead of everybody else, and you know, a lot of times we're just playing catch up, trying to figure out what the hell these people are doing and how they're getting away with it.
Well, I noticed at one point, Brad, that they tried to hang it on the Carter Center, didn't they?
Well, yeah.
And the Carter Center.
All their materials, and they still say in their materials on the website that this is sponsored in part. I guess Baker has his own center as well as the Carter Center. Well, when we checked with the Carter Center, they said, no, we don't know anything about this commission. Our work is completely international work only. We don't have a mandate to deal with information in the United States. And, as a matter of fact, Carter has recently left the Carter Center. So he's doing this as a private citizen. It has nothing to do with the Carter Center. And yet the commission has run around saying that this is all being done in cooperation with the Carter Center. I mean, you know, they also said that the reason those hearings yesterday, the audience had to be kept separate from the actual commission, was due to Secret Service concerns. Mind you, when we talked to the Secret Service, they said, oh, we know nothing about that. So, it's almost too unbelievable.
They just lie.
Yep.
I mean, they just say it, and they expect to be believed, and they repeat it a few times, and then it's truth.
Yep, and the media lets them get away with it.
So
you got jerks like me who have to hold them accountable for it somehow.
Well, God bless you for trying, Brad. I'm sincere when I say that. I hope as things progress, of course, I'll report what I see from your blog and try to direct folks to velvetrevolution.us. But I hope maybe you'll update us as things develop. I remember, and I don't know your politics, okay?
Right.
And under the circumstances, not being rude, I don't much care. I like what you're doing. I like you. You know, this search for facts thing means a lot to me, and it's kind of the way we build the program. But I don't know. Do you remember the vast number of conspiracy theories that swirled around Bill Clinton and every media outlet in America picked up on it. You had Indiana Congressman Dan Burton shooting watermelons in his backyard to prove that Hillary killed Vince Foster. Do you remember all that?
Yeah, I remember it very well. And as a matter of fact, that was one of the reasons I waited for several months on that Clint Curtis, or I waited for several months before even talking about the Ray Lemmy aspect of it, because I did not want it to end up in that conspiracy theory bin you're talking about, where, you know, all there was hundreds of people who were killed personally by the hands of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. You know, this story was too good, and I didn't want it to end up in, you know, to folks to be able to sort of throw it away and throw it into the, you know, the Vince Foster bin. But when those photographs that didn't exist actually came out, well, I really had no choice to report it. But yeah, I mean, when it happens on the right, boy, they're all over it. When it happens on the left, the media couldn't be less interested, and I guess that's that mythical liberal media you're talking about.
Much more liberal. I don't think we could stand it anymore, do you, Brad?
Yeah, exactly. You got it right.
Brad, thank you so much. This has been a scintillating conversation. very much unlike any I've had on this show, and I mean that in every good way possible. I wish you the absolute best in your endeavors, and I you have mine and this audience's admiration for what you do.
Thank you, Bob. Keep holding their feet to the fire, and you know, point them. I do appreciate you pointing them to bradblog.com and velvetrevolution.us, and folks, feel free to donate to the effort at both places, because this really is become more than a 24/7 job for me, and it relies on folks like you to support the effort, because we ain't getting help from the politicians or the big funders out there. We're doing this all on our own, so we do appreciate your support, and please keep making noise.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care. Wow. I don't know about you, but I feel like I've just had an ice cold shot of Aquavit. This is amazing. And you know, I think you can tell from the way that Brad delivers his information, this is not something you're going to catch in between aliens abducted my baby and the chupacabras ate my sheep in the middle of the night on George Norrie. This is reality. This is the America you live in. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat on this particular issue. You ought to give a damn whether or not your vote is counted. Or is that just me being another liberal? No taxation without representation. When in the course of human events, 47 years ago, every single great word that has ever been said in the history of the United States has had as its underpinning the idea of an elected leadership governing by consent of the people. When we cannot trust the ways in which the votes are counted, when we cannot even know for sure if they are counted, the consent of the governed is gone. Give a damn. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
A cyclone whipped around the house the night he was born to a wealthy plantation owner. This story next on Biography Radio.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy. You can lighten that load a little at Sam's Club. To save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull. Place your order online at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up as early as 7 a.m. the next day. Now that's teamwork, and we're proud to be a small part of your team. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
The wind that night was nothing compared to the storms the young revolutionary would later initiate. The first was in 1953. A lawyer by training, he had switched to politics to oppose the rich who ran the island state. But as he was running for Congress, a military coup overturned the government. Furious, he too turned to violence. With a band of armed rebels, he stormed the army barracks. It was a disaster. Scores were killed and he was thrown in jail. Once out, he led a second attack. It also failed, but he escaped to the hills and gathered support among the peasants. In 1959, following a general strike, the American-backed leader who ran the country fled, and the bearded guerrilla took over. Over the next years, he clashed repeatedly with the United States. Presidents Eisenhower and Kennedy both crossed swords with his communist state, including a face-off with the Russians that sparked fears of nuclear war. Despite the guerrilla leader's promises, elections were never held. For two generations, he dictated policies that educated his people but left the nation in poverty. Now gray with age, but still uncompromising, is the Cuban president, Fidel Castro. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
WWNR Beckley. Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. You can depend on us. News Talk 620. WWNR Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
You are real actors, huh?
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Just during dinner for the next few years.
There's no substitute for a loving parent.
According to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Okay, I guess.
Is that the best you can do?
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel, dealing with a mixture of clouds and clear sky from here on out into late night. 53 will be the low. Sunshine, a few passing clouds expected on Wednesday, but a dry 73, so a little bit cooler than we were on Tuesday. Thursday's weather, well, chance of thunderstorms, 50% to be exact, with a high in the mid-60s. And looking into Friday's forecast, the risk of thunderstorms and showers hanging around exists as well.
WWNR Beckley.
You can be right and be wrong, or be left and be right. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, I'm Bob Kincaid. A little something we call Head On. I thought that was just an amazing conversation with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com and velvetrevolution.us. Go by, have a look. Got an email from JJ. JJ writes in, JJ knows how to connect dots. This is good stuff. It seems like the church suffers from the same problems the United States does when it comes to electing people to the highest office. All those people out there, but only a small group gets to make the choice. Sound much like the Electoral College to you, Bob? Yes, it does. Electoral College, College of Cardinals. You know, I think this is the kind of college sports we can do without. But really, if you consider the stuff that Brad was talking about, isn't this a descent, what we're looking at, isn't this a descent into the same sort of secretive, no way to know what happened election process that just took place today in Rome? If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, well, if you ask a conservative, it's a platypus. Sure. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-WWNR. That, of course, is 9967. Let's go back to the phones. Yerachmiel has waited patiently through the interview, and I appreciate it. Yerachmiel, you're Head On.
Hello?
Hey.
Can you read me?
I'm reading you loud and clear.
Okay. You know, where did you get this? I heard some of your exordium there in the beginning about this new pope having been in the Hitlerjugend, whatever you call it.
The Hitlerjugend?
Yeah. Where did you get this?
Reading up on the man's history from various journalism sources.
Really? Yeah. You know, like newspapers or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard the announcement. You see, it's interesting. They announced this man and the main broadcasters of news.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're just superficial. I don't know what to say.
Well, you know, you've got I think the old statistics indicate, Yerachmiel, that when you're dealing with broadcast media, you have maybe a minute and a half for a full blown package story, but you've got 5 to 10 seconds to get the listener or the viewer to pay attention to you. So I think there is a sort of built-in vacuousness to that sort of thing. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, all I could say is that sort of thing, you know, for a pope, like you said, with your logic. I mean, for someone to, you know, be forgiven for the sins of his youth is one thing, but to be raised to a position where he represents becomes representative of Christ. He referred to the last pope, referred to himself as representative of Christ.
They all do.
Yeah, and I don't know, Jesus be in favor of molesting little boys.
You know, I'm thinking he wouldn't care much for that. And now I don't want to put myself in his shoes or try to speak for him.
I think he'd sooner give his life for them than abuse them.
Kind of did.
And would not rely upon psychiatrists to determine whether or not the representative of Jesus.
You do that so well, you're talking
to his position.
Well, look, here's the gut check test. Now, I'm not hammering on the guy for having been in the Hitlerjugend, because maybe it was mandatory. But here's the gut check test, Yerachmiel. Use your imagination. We've all seen the films. We saw, you know, marching around in the little short pants with the brown shirts and the red kerchiefs. We've seen that, right? Now, imagine little Joseph Ratzinger standing there giving the Sieg Heil with his right arm outstretched. If he was a member of the group, it happened. That's the Pope.
What should he have done? Should he have sent it and taken consequences?
I don't know that you've got that a child has that kind of moral sense. I'm not berating him for having been part of it. I'm just saying that there is some sort of line of demarcation where forgiveness and expiation of sin doesn't merge into colossal elevation.
Or qualification, you know. And I have a question about a person's character. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not an ordinary position. I mean, this whole, you know, everything in this world, you know, is so superficial. For example, I'm writing a lengthy thing here now lately about, rabbinism, ecclesiasticism, which I call the church's traditions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Bible critics' works were very secular, and I call them Bible butchers. Because they attack the Bible more than they study it. And they're so negative about everything, you know. But then there's the universalist who looks all the religion. They're all one religion, the paganism, the monotheism, you know. And, well, anyway, I'm getting this part here where we're very excited about it because, we still got the papal voodoo from the Middle Ages, you know, when Constantine, when Rome took over the religion,
right?
You know, it was no longer a church; it became a political entity.
Well, and it was done for political purposes.
Yeah, and they took all the pagan dogmas that developed in about three centuries. You know, Jesus is God and all that. Now they got Holy Mary, Mother of God.
Right.
I mean, how could a human being create the universe? You know,
God's got a mommy.
Well, she created the. I don't know. He was supposed to be here before she was. Look, listen. They say that people, like, they're going to say that, oh, Yerachmiel, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you don't understand. And, I'd say the Greek mythology probably has more rationale than any of this stuff. And it's 2005. No one's addressing the fact. I mean, everybody wants to be Catholic. Not everybody, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
all these people, they want to be Catholic. Like what I did, for example, I left Orthodox Judaism. I never reconnected with any other religion because once you've seen one, you've seen them all. I mean, if a guy gets fooled once, first of all, I was born in a community where that was the only option for me.
Right.
But when I left it, I became more intellectual about what's going on in the world. And if you get fooled twice, then that's on you. You know.
Right.
And the thing is. No, but where is the agenda? The Galileo knocked the Pope flat on his rear end. He won.
Yeah.
Now all the Catholic schools and all the universities. I mean, wasn't the Big Bang theory, conceived by a Jesuit?
I'm not sure. Was it?
I think so. But the point is, you know, they have scientific thought, you know. I mean, they're
well, the Jesuits pride themselves on their science and on their learning in general.
Yeah, and what bothers me is everybody. Number one, they have to be Catholic. They can't disconnect from the church. because there's this physical connection, you know, like Jerusalem or Mecca. If you're disconnected from it, you're disconnected from God. I don't know. That's how they feel about it. And then they want to reform the church, but the church is not a democracy. I mean, and they don't care if somebody believes in papal voodoo. I mean, this level of thinking is, this comes from the time when people thought the world was flat, and if you walk off the end, you fall into hell.
I know.
And this is a time when people couldn't read.
I know.
Of, you know,
and crackers that turn into flesh and wine that turns into blood.
Transubstantiation, no substantiation. And the thing is, our enlightenment, for example, you know, included improvement of all thought, you know, scientific thought, morality, every the founding fathers were interested in everything.
Yes.
And what you have here is a combination of, it reminds me of Nazism in the sense that the Nazis, Nietzsche said, I mentioned this once, Nietzsche said, oh, they have Christianity and anti-Semitism. They have science and Christianity. You know, they have all these ideals, and they put them all together. And you can't put them all together if you have any sense. Now, America's doing this. I don't say the Catholics, they want to be Catholic, but they don't want to get into the core of things about what makes it tick, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then America right now, anything you say, okay, let me go back to Aristotelian logic. If you have two statements that have the same subject and opposite predicates, by definition, that is a contradiction.
Yes.
Okay, for example, you could say, we're justified in invading Iraq because the Iraqi people, they love democracy so much, they want, you know, this is what they say.
Yeah.
It's a cult, they want us to do it, we're going to cooperate with them, they're going to cooperate with us. Then they send it, and a minute later, he's going to say, we want the war to the terrorists. What? He just told me a minute ago that they're peaceful people. Now you brought the war to the terrorists? You brought the terrorists to the innocent people who are killing them now. And now who knows? God knows how long this killing of civilians is going to go on. And nobody's talking. I don't say nobody. You know, I know some people are. But I'm saying there should be an outcry from millions of people like you and me, for example. One of the reasons I call up on the program, I say, hey, Raphael, you know, if you never talk to somebody once in a while, has a little bit of sense, you're going to go crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So you listen a little bit, you talk a little bit. But if you never, ever talked, okay, I could meditate and be with God. But it gets kind of abstract after a while.
Well, and it's a one-sided conversation, too.
Yeah, well, it's kind of I mean, God doesn't talk in human language.
Right.
You know, it's very nebulous. It's very kind of grand. But what we're doing, what I'm concerned about now is you can hardly, pardon me, but you can hardly make sense on a pre-1A level for a school and a school for mentally retarded monkeys and have a voice.
I know. Well, look, I mean, part and parcel of what you talk about, Yaron, is what's happening in our government. This big hootenanny that's going to go down this Sunday at this great big Baptist church in Louisville, Kentucky. And Bill Frist is going to be there. And they're going to talk about how nasty the judges are. And how and that they're nasty because they don't follow lockstep with what they, you know, if you do not, it's gotten to this point. If you do not believe exactly like these people believe, therefore you are beyond the pale. And that's Jews, that's Muslims, that's me, that's you, that's
Thomas Jefferson.
And Thomas Jefferson.
Oh,
and
you,
James,
you know,
Madison.
By the way, the more I read about Thomas Jefferson, he was condemned in his time for being irreverent and heretical.
Right.
And this whole thing is not so. Oh, could you imagine? Benjamin Franklin was not exactly a conservative man. I mean, in his behavior.
No, not at all. And
I'm not copying anyone. I'm just saying.
No.
Here's this myth about the founding fathers. They were all supposed to be like Billy Graham, but they weren't like Billy Graham.
No, not at all. For heaven's sakes, read the writings of Thomas Paine, Yaron, if you haven't already.
Thomas Paine was an atheist. And he gave us common sense, and common sense is one of the basic, you know, foundations of our
revolution. Yeah, read the Rights of Man. That'll just blows the doors off the idea that there was anything Christian or, in fact, religious about the founding of this nation. That's just a great big honking lie
Well, the problem I have is, you know, whatever there was of Christianity, you know, basic concepts of justice, you know, liberty, basic broad concepts
mm-hmm.
of Christianity, which Thomas Jefferson wrote the Jefferson Bible because he wanted to extract, really what he did was he extracted from Jesus what he liked.
Yeah, you
know,
and he
really his own thing, but what he's saying was, well, you know, you don't just throw it away. There's something there. Though he certainly was very bold about it. I mean, I thought he should have called it the Life and Morals of Thomas Jefferson instead of the Life and Morals of Jesus. He really doctored it up to suit himself.
Well,
the more I learned about it, the more I learned that, you know, Thomas Jefferson was a philosopher.
Yes, he was.
And he was not. He was like Nietzsche in the sense he was not afraid to say something. Well, he was caught. He was more cautious than Nietzsche would go out and say just about anything. Thomas Jefferson sometimes realized he'd want to clobber him for it, so sometimes he was not too loud about it.
Well, and he wanted to be president, and he toned himself down a little bit but on that account. But there's no getting around the fact that, and I believe it, I'm pretty sure it was Jefferson, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of, there has been no more pernicious and hateful influence on the history of man in the last 2,000 years than organized religion.
Well, by the way, I know there's a little bit of room for satire. What you say, men in red dresses?
Yeah, the cardinals.
Is it a robe?
It's a dress.
I thought it was a robe.
I don't know. My mom wore things like this. Very, you know, it buttons down the front. It's a robe. It's a dress. The little dainty lace aprons are the things that really get me.
Can I give you an example? There's a thing called the Vatican Codex. One of the Greek texts of the Bible.
Yes.
Speaking of the Vatican, you know how they're still holding things back. I wanted to take this as an opportunity, speaking of the Pope. Now, the Vatican Codex was not written by the Vatican. It was written in the early, somewhere around 325, you know.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most authentic, you know, leftovers from the early times. But the Vatican Codex and the Sinai Codex, another very old manuscript,
mm-hmm.
They actually leave certain big passages out of the Bible. Now, the Sinai Codex was obtained from the Greek Orthodox monastery near Sinai. You know,
correct.
The Alexandrian Codex was also an important one. But let me give you a couple of verses that'll show you why they hide this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus is saying, according to this passage which is omitted. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He that believeth and is baptized. He's saying, go out and preach the gospel in the end of Mark, okay?
Yeah.
He that believeth, and is, I'm reading from the King James, pardon my English. He that believes, I'll translate it into English.
Okay.
He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. But he that believes not shall be damned. Now, we know from other verses, Jesus said, oh, no, I don't want to bring fire down on people. I have not come to judge them or condemn them.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have, isn't this like the skinhead philosophy, you know, you're damned.
Or the Bush,
don't believe.
Or the Bush philosophy. If you're either with us or you're against us.
Yeah, and another thing, it says, here are the signs. In my name, you should cast out devils and speak in new tongues. Blah blah blah. This is all left out. And shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. Well, all these snake handlers, and he always said, all these snake handlers, why don't they drink poison? Since they believe,
they do
literally.
They do. They drink highly titrated, thinned out strychnine.
Well, why don't they drink straight poison?
Well, that their faith, I mean, they got faith, but I mean, yeah.
And why don't they move mountains? Why don't they heal the sick?
Well, and you got to remember, as Ben Birch reminded us one night on the show, the snake handlers also refrigerate the serpents before they take them up. It kind of makes them a little lethargic and less likely to bite. Oh, yeah, you refrigerate your snakes.
There's another piece of information I didn't get from the media. But I keep on. I know the media. Well, I just want to give you one example. And, you know, very interesting, the other passage in John where it says that they had an adulteress and they caught her in the act. I don't know how you get witnesses to see a man and a woman do this stuff in private, but somehow they caught her in the act.
No, you knock down the door and you march right in.
Well, I don't know. You know, it doesn't really say how they did it. But the point is, they took her. They asked him, "Well, Jesus, what should we, Master? What should we do with her? We caught her in the act." He said, after a lengthy game about writing in the sand or whatever, a new start, he picked his head up and he said, "He who has not sinned, let him cast the first stone." And they all walked away one by one. Well, very interestingly, that's another passage that's left out of these very genuine codices.
I'll be darned.
And I was always wondering, where does it say in the laws of Moses that you have to be a perfect, you know, individual?
Well, Arachneel, have you read the Gospel of St. Thomas?
A little bit. I have some trouble with some of those documents. That sounds from doctrines that I consider.
Well, it's very interesting because it I read the Gospel of St. Thomas and it sounds very rabbinical. You know, the questions and the stuff that you've really got, and it's almost in some ways Buddhist. It's like a Buddhist koan.
Well, I sampled a little bit of the other books that are not in the Bible. Some of them I like very much. I'm not prejudiced, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, like Clement of Rome, I like him very much. He's very basic. He's very calm. He speaks about, you know, a certain topic very nicely, you know.
Well,
some of these things have wild ideas, like the Epistle of Barnabas says, "Why, I love you more than myself," you know. And what about love my neighbor as thyself?
Well, for instance, in one of the Gnostic Gospels, you've remarked on the fact that it would have been very remarkable in the culture in which Christ lived. I believe you've remarked in the past that it would have been very strange for him to have been an unmarried young Jewish male, because marriage is the norm.
Well, in the rabbinical tradition, it's like not getting married is kind of
sinful.
You just don't, you know, it's assumed that you got to do. You know what I mean?
Right, and that would have been out of the ordinary.
Well, but Jesus did many things that were outrageous.
That's true too, and yet within one of these Gnostic Gospels, it makes very clear that he was very closely intertwined with Mary Magdalene.
Well, some say that he married her.
I don't have a problem with that.
You know what fascinated me? All these years, I've been studying, you know, I study, you know, the symbolic meaning of things. I study the language. I do all these detailed studies. But just recently, the question was, I heard on the TV about the Da Vinci Code, the question was, Jesus, did he have a wife? I said, well, that's very interesting. There's no discussion of it.
Well,
you know,
let me point something out for you to keep your eye out for, your Arachneel. It'll probably be a couple of years in the happening, but when you hear it, you're going to want to wander through it. By virtue of new scientific techniques for being able to read this stuff, there's something out there called the Oxyrhynchus papyri, and they were literally pulled out of a garbage dump in Oxyrhynchus, Egypt. And it's being described as the Holy Grail of ancient thought. It's fragments of stuff that we thought had been lost forever, and by virtue of new technology, it's just black papyrus, but they've figured out a way to read the ink within the black papyrus.
Yeah.
And they're saying that some of this may be the earliest manifestations of some New Testament books. There are plays by that were forgotten or lost by Sophocles. I mean, really.
Egypt is terrific for discovering ancient pottery.
Well, and you mentioned the Codex Sinaiticus. That was literally found, Arachneel, in a pile of old papers that the monks were using for fuel for their heating fires.
Which one is this?
That's the Codex Sinaiticus, the Sinai Codex.
Well, I thought Tischendorf was a German scholar, went down there and just, you know, managed to.
Yeah, well, he did, but it was in a pile.
Yeah, one time it was in a dump.
Yeah, it was in a pile. It was waiting to be burned. God only knows what else they burned.
Well, you know something? The Greek Orthodox are funny people. They don't care about the ancient stuff, you know, material.
Well, not only
all they care about is. They have the Textus Receptus,
not only that, Arachneel. You've also got to remember that within that the Hermetic or monkish tradition, a couple of hundred years in, literacy failed. You know, literacy didn't matter anymore because they were told what they needed to believe.
Right.
We got to roll on. I got to roll on and take the break, though. I sure did enjoy the conversation, Your Honor.
Yeah, good night.
You take care. And we will go back to the phones immediately upon returning from our break. The phone number, of course, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. You know me. I'm Bob.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. One man is dead following a single vehicle accident in Greenbrier County yesterday morning. Gary Williams Gassman of Rupert was traveling east on I-64 around 5 o'clock when his car crossed the median and hit a guardrail near mile marker 163. The vehicle then left the roadway and traveled 300 feet down an embankment. Gassman was entrapped in the vehicle until emergency personnel removed him. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The accident now under investigation by the Greenbrier County Sheriff's Office. A Scarborough man is headed to prison for sexual assault. Richard Eugene Stover was convicted of two counts of sexually assaulting his girlfriend in August of 2003 in the Paint Creek Road area. On Monday, Circuit Judge Charles Vickers sentenced Stover to two terms of 10 to 25 years in prison on each count. Both sentences will run concurrently. U.S. Airways became the low-cost carrier of all times for a few hours this weekend, selling round-trip flights to some American cities for less than the price of a gallon of gasoline. The Arlington, Virginia-based carrier was selling tickets to smaller cities for $1.86 plus fees. The prices lasted a few hours Saturday until airline officials found and corrected the problem. Most of the fares involved flights into Lebanon, New Hampshire, or Watertown, New York. For the rest of this evening, partly cloudy. Temperatures in the mid-60s now. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low near 50. And then for tomorrow, sort of a repeat of today with temperatures in the low to mid-70s, partly cloudy, and a slight increase of humidity. Then there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms moving in ahead of a cold front tomorrow night, but more likely on Thursday. Showers and thunderstorms, temperatures dropping to the mid-60s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Nearly 70 million Americans, men, women, the old, and the young, share a common enemy, arthritis. Make a difference in the fight against arthritis. Team up with Colony Drug, the Arthritis Foundation, and Southern Communications for Beckley's second Arthritis Walk, Thursday, May 19th, on the McManus Rail Trail at New River Park. Have fun and help fight the nation's leading cause of disability, arthritis. Form a team with your friends and family. For details, call Colony Drug and Wellness Center at 252-5305 and join us May 19th for a walk in the park.
Hello, everybody. I'm Tony Tantillo, your fresh grocer. Do you want to make a great guacamole dip like I do? I love making those dips. Well, you need a certain variety of avocado. That's the Haas variety avocado, dark skin avocado. This time of year, there's a lot of green skin avocados available, but those have more of a water content. You need the high oil content that binds that dip together like a Haas avocado does. When you buy the avocados, you want to make sure it's nice and dark. Buy the ones that are ripe. If you buy the ones that are green, the Haas variety, and you bring them home, you know, 9 out of 10 times, they're not going to ripen properly. Let the store ripen the avocado for you. That's their job. You buy them when they're perfect so you can make your dip or make a quesadilla or put them in the salads. And also when you buy the avocado, you want to make sure that they're fairly firm to the touch. When you bring them home, don't store them in your refrigerator. They will turn black. I'm Tony Tantillo, your fresh grocer. Eat fresh and stay healthy. Hello, I'm Tony Tantillo. You know, sometimes information on nutrition and health can seem overwhelming. That's why there's the Dole Nutrition News. Twice a month, this electronic newsletter will bring you the very latest in diet and nutrition research, plus recipes, fitness tips, and natural beauty ideas. Best of all, it's absolutely free. How do you get all this information? Simply just go to www.dolenutrition.com. To sign up, it's free, it's easy, and it's loaded with news that you can use to lose weight and look great. Again, that's www.dolenutrition.com.
WWNR Beckley.
Shining a liberal light in the conservative darkness. Bob Kincaid, head on.
Welcome back. 25 minutes before 10 o'clock. 25 minutes left in tonight's Tuesday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and Wayne has waited through the break, and we appreciate it. Hey, Wayne. How you doing?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. That was I enjoyed the heck out of that conversation with Brad
Friedman.
Oh,
God, that's what I called you about. I mean, Radio Free Beckley is alive and well.
Yeah, scores again.
Yes, that was excellent. It was funny. My wife and I were talking earlier about we like to give a little bit of money to this candidate or that candidate. And now we don't, you know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking a lot of money, you know. Every
Tom
now
DeLay
and then
money.
$25 you should give the, you know.
Yeah.
Well, being that you can't tell, I mean, I'm so disgusted with politics and politicians and, you know, a Republican, Democrat, but it don't matter anymore.
All gagged up, aren't you?
Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm a Democrat. I'm the kind of Democrat I think that, Democrats were. And I'll always be that. But I can't identify these other people anymore.
It's getting...
You know, I'm so mad at John Kerry, I could puke.
Yeah.
He took us on this long ride, and then he just walked away.
Well, while we were on the long ride, when he should have been out fighting the swift boat veterans, he was windsurfing off Martha's Vineyard.
Exactly.
I understand.
The election, George Bush and all them people could talk about the 3 million votes or 4 million, whatever. You know, fact of the matter is, if you turned around 60,000 in Ohio, he'd have been president.
Yeah.
So that's all that counts.
Right, and he winds up his campaign with positive money left unspent.
Right,
you know, what do they say when it's playoff time in the NFL? Don't leave anything on the field.
Exactly.
You know, you play till there's nothing left in you to play with.
That's exactly right.
And now
he wants to. You know, I mean, I get emails from him all the time. I delete them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to hear what you got to say.
Click.
You know, why didn't you say, you know, where'd you go after the election?
We know where he spent Christmas.
Yeah. And, but this was dynamite. Now, I had read about the Yang thing and the illegal aliens and, I had read about that before, but this guy really got into it. And, what I started to say is, that's where I'm sending my money.
Yeah.
This guy.
Well, I mean,
keep on doing, you know.
I asked Brad if he remembered, you know, Dan Burton shooting watermelons because Hillary killed Vince Foster.
Right.
But when he mentioned the fella mailing computer chips for Hellfire anti-tank missiles to China, I flashed back, and you know, it was Rush, it was the Hannity, it was.
Savage. They got on Clinton?
Yeah, Loral Corporation. Now
right.
this deal was strictly vetted by the State Department. It was done completely according to law, and you know, they were ready to string Bill Clinton up for a traitor.
Right.
Now, meanwhile, down in Florida, Jeb Bush's first running mate.
Who's his brother?
Goofy fella. His first running mate. Is counsel to a corporation that has an illegal alien spy sending Hellfire anti-tank missiles to China. The guy pleads guilty on it in federal court, gets 3 years probation.
Don't forget that $100 fine. Ooh.
Oh,
my God. And he gets to stay here.
And gets to stay. Damn. You know,
and that's okay.
Now, meanwhile, Matt Drudge, a few years ago, starts a rumor that Bill Clinton has an illegitimate black child in Arkansas. The New York Times didn't even look twice before they ran that story.
That was Thomas Jefferson.
Bill Clinton, too,
and Strom Thurmond.
But this story in Florida doesn't get traction, and they're only, you know, well, we only sent 10 or 15 this month. It was a slow month. Whoa.
Oh, gosh. And where's the, I bet I shouldn't mention names, I guess.
Yeah, no names, but you can certainly ask, where's the...
Mike's and Jeff's?
Yeah. I know.
You know.
Yeah, I mean... If this happened and the governor of Florida was a Democrat, there would be screams for the man to be publicly pilloried, drawn and quartered, and his constituents' parts scattered to the four corners of the United States.
Yeah, the whole nine yards. It's absolutely amazing. Well, this guy. Well, I went to his blog thing,
mm-hmm.
and I want to. You know, go to the other sites and check this out. But if, you know, if I got an extra $25 at the end of the week, this guy's getting it.
Yeah.
I want to encourage him to keep going. I don't know what he does for a living, but I'd like to see him get enough donations to take a leave of absence and keep working.
Without it. Because, you know, he's certainly not getting that sweet love money from Tom DeLay's Americans for a Republican. Nah, I'm thinking not.
Me neither. Tom went after, who did he go after today? Kennedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Justice Kennedy.
Right. Republican.
Yes.
Oh, and that's a concerted effort. They were doing that over the weekend on the Faux News Channel. That's FAUX. The Brit Hume was just screaming to the top of his stupid lungs about, oh, Anthony Kennedy is the most mediocre judge ever to sit on the Supreme Court. Wah, wah, wah.
Who put him there? Ronald Reagan, wasn't it?
That would be Ronald Reagan.
Yes. He was a Republican.
Right, right.
I believe.
And Anthony Kennedy is a conservative. Votes with Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas a lot of the time.
Fat Tony Scalia. I love that name.
Well, he is. I mean...
Well, yeah. What can you say? He is. That's all there is to it. Well, listen, man, I don't know what... if there's anybody waiting...
It's okay. I mean, if you... It doesn't matter.
I think this was a great show. I'm glad that there's people... Still, you know, it's so easy to be beaten down.
Yeah.
It's so easy to just go, well, nobody's paying any attention to this stuff. Why should I care?
Yeah.
You know, so thank God for people like Brad.
Yeah, Brad Friedman. And hopefully we'll get Clint Curtis on and let him tell his own story.
Oh, I think that would be real good. We got to, if you can arrange that, you ought to... You know, or Tuesday the 18th or whatever.
Yeah, bill it on the upfront.
Yeah, do a little. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we can get people listening, because I think, that'd be a very good show. And I want to see these the pictures and the things. Who was the guy that committed suicide?
Yeah,
in a motel that he checked into 2 days before he got into the state or whatever.
Mr. Lemmy.
Okay.
Yeah, what'd he do? Stabbed himself 37 times?
Yeah. Either that or, you know, maybe he was one of them guys that committed suicide with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. They have not decided yet. It's like a line out of Casablanca with these people, Wayne. They have not yet decided whether or not he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape.
Right.
You know, this is like the Hatfield dude in Arkansas, the guy that wrote Fortunate Son. And told the world about George Bush's cocaine problem. Now, a year or so later, I'll be damned. He was all depressed, and he went to an Arkansas motel and killed himself.
Isn't that funny how that happens?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you know, stay off a small aircraft, and stay away from people in dark suits that say, "Hey, buddy, come here."
Exactly.
because people have a way of turning up dead. I mean, Jerry Falwell circulated that god-awful Clinton Chronicles thing. I don't know if you ever saw that. That was a beautiful piece of work. A lovely, lovely piece of fiction, and it got so blown out of the water and so discredited that even Falwell, his own filthy self, had to step away from it. But when you're talking about the Bush family, Wayne, it's not a joke. People cross them and die.
Yes. Yes. Well, the and that's what, you know, Brad has to keep this up for his own safety.
Yeah, and
you know, he has to be as loud as he can get.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if I can do it. I'd love to get John Conyers on the show just to tell people what is being done to us up there.
Have you ever seen his report?
Yeah. 102 pages? Yeah.
Yeah.
I read it.
Okay, I've got it.
Yeah, that's another one of those that makes the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck.
Yes, it does.
You know, 6,000 votes for George Bush just appearing
out of
nowhere.
I spend a lot of money on ink cartridges, but, you know.
Yeah, a lot of money. Those things aren't cheap.
I know.
This Carter Baker Commission arises of its own force out of nowhere.
Yeah, and I mean, Jimmy Carter has to come out more strongly on this, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, no, he does have something to do with it. He's in it. He's on it.
Well, I don't understand he's allowing this. This isn't Jimmy Carter.
No, it's not. Well, I think they're probably using him as a token. He's got a good, solid ethical base. And he was probably sold on the idea that we were going to make a legitimate inquiry into voting irregularities in the 2004 election. He said, well, I can get on with that. And
yeah, but, I mean, the minute they tell him James Baker's on the committee, you guys say, whoa.
Yeah, I don't.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I don't hang out with people who who defend the Saudis against American citizens.
Take my name off of there. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, of course, I don't know. Maybe he's...
How old does that do, too? Baker.
Oh, I don't think he has a real age. You know, he's one of those, you know, demons from hell, asphodel or whatever that, you know, their age.
Does he come out in sunlight?
Hell, he can't.
Have we seen him in sunlight?
Nobody's ever seen him in a mirror. I mean, he runs from garlic.
Yeah, well, that's a sign, you know.
Oh, you know, these people, they just kill me. Hellfire missiles, chips to China. we only did 10 or 15 because it was a slow month.
Too much, man.
And those things will wind up being used on us.
Well, I certainly hope there were a lot of people listening tonight, and I hope they go to these blogs. And you know, it's time to wake up. And you made the point, and it's very true. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, whatever you call yourself. It's time for American citizens to take back their country.
Well, you know.
And you know.
That or just, you know, quit this fiction of calling us citizens, call us subjects of the crown, and you know, hail Caesar.
Right. There you go.
And the other part you were talking about, you know who I would like to hear, I would like to have here, Clint Curtis's story and Brad Friedman's story. I would like for our Secretary of State to hear this, because she's one of these people that thinks electronic voting machines are the neatest thing since sliced bread.
Who, Ireland?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She.
A new one?
Yeah, we're gonna get some electronic voting machines here in not too awfully long. Now, she's saying that they're going to have a paper trail. That much is good.
That's not, you know. I'm a true believer in what you say. You know, why can't we just have paper ballots?
I mean, sometimes...
You know, they could give everybody one, you know, one of them little bitty golf pencils.
Yeah. You can buy a crate of them for next to nothing.
Exactly. And you get, you know, you get to keep it. I voted 2004.
Yeah.
You could take it home. And then, you know, we can have people actually count the votes. Not a machine.
And not a
real people.
Not a corporation.
No.
Public
no
servants.
Corporations. You know, citizen volunteers. Hell, you could pay them if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but let's have people do it, not machines.
Yeah, and let them,
people should be, you know.
And let them do it in front of God and everybody.
Well, exactly. Well, there was another, that was another thing that, and that's in the Conyers report. The remember when they had, when they shut down that one precinct and wouldn't let anybody watch the vote count?
Oh, yeah.
Because they were, the Secret Service warned them about terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
You remember that incident?
Yeah, I were, yeah.
And the Secret Service, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. These guys are pros, Wayne.
Yeah. And why, you know, why aren't there more people upset?
Well, because, you know, there's a race on Sunday.
Yes. And,
a sale at Walmart.
And let me see, yeah, and there's, Survivor Island. And,
yeah, and, Who Wants a New Nose. And,
yeah, and Desperate Housewives or something like that, or.
Yeah, we are a nation with collective attention deficit disorder,
right.
Wayne.
And
look,
and,
a bunny.
And yeah. What celebrity is on trial this week? Let me see. Yeah, Beretta. Beretta got acquitted, didn't he?
Yeah, Beretta walked.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson, I don't know.
I don't know either. I think, can't we just exile him to Neverland and,
yeah,
you know, close the gate? And we get the key. You know, he's not allowed to come out.
Doesn't seem like a bad idea.
Huh?
Doesn't seem like a bad idea. There's plenty of acreage there, for heaven's sakes.
Well, yeah, and he's got them animals and stuff.
Poor animals.
You know, he could be happy. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre world.
Well, you know, a little bit at a time.
That's all you can do. Yeah. That's all you can do.
But it sometimes it's fun in the process, and tonight was one of those. The story of the guy checking into the hotel 2 days before he left Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he committed suicide.
Yeah, and with a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
God.
That's tough. You ever shoot a bow?
Oh, yeah.
That's tough, especially when the arrows come in the back. That's the tough part.
Reminds me of that line from To Kill a Mockingbird with a Sheriff. Bob Ewell fell on his knife 37 times. Oh.
Oh, man.
The missing photographs, the no toxicology, the cremation. You know, what are we supposed to think?
Well, I don't know. I was watching something about the, I guess it was the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, Sunday night.
Yeah, I guess that was.
Mm-hmm.
And, Who was the guy that smoked the cigarettes? Was constantly smoking cigarettes. They kept interviewing.
Had the leather jacket and the dark glasses.
Yeah, and the strange facial hair.
Yeah, he wrote Holy Blood, Holy Grail. Yeah.
Yes. I can't think of his name.
Me either.
Can't think. But you know, he made a comment. You know, like, what's harder to believe, that Jesus was married and he had a child, or that he walked on water?
Me, I come down on Jesus was married and had a kid. It's
yeah,
good,
me too. I don't know how I reached that conclusion, but
well,
it seems logical to me.
Yeah, it's because you're a liberal pagan heretic.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Well, that's your problem too.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, we dance around fires.
Don't be, you know, don't be just calling me that.
Yeah, I know. God, please.
I mean, well, I have all kinds of, I don't know, social. Problems, you know. I believe working people ought to have a living wage and health insurance and stuff like that.
Crazy.
I'm a real mean guy.
And you know, I believe that the Family Medical Leave Act ought to be left alone, or maybe even made stronger. How about 12 weeks of paid leave? No.
They did that in California, you know.
Well, commies.
I got, want to get a big sign made to carry around in my truck. It's my, well, I think I've mentioned it before. It's my, you know, all the different little stickers you could get about union, you know, proud to be union, this,
right,
that, blah,
right.
blah, blah. This one says something about, to the effect, welcome to the weekend, brought to you by organized labor.
Right.
I'd like to get a great big 4x8 sign of that.
Not a bad idea.
Because it's the truth.
Yeah, but, you know, we don't need organized labor anymore because all of
because we don't need weekends.
No, because America's corporate masters, they're always going to be good to us, and they know what they know what's right.
Yes, well, that. Yeah, I know.
Enough to make you scream.
Huh?
Enough to make you scream.
And you know the lie thing, and I don't like the eyes.
No. Well, we're out of here, Wayne.
Hey, have a good evening.
All right, see ya.
And thanks for the show, man.
Appreciate it.
Radio Free Beckley rocks.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, pal.
Bye now. Okay, thanks to those who participated by talking, by listening, by occasionally shouting at the radio because I'm such a crazed radical. However, it's important. Thanks for the emailers, JJ. David, I'm sorry I didn't get to your email. We'll start the show with that tomorrow night. You make some very good sense. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night. Of course, tomorrow night will be the Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On, like every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. I'll be here. Hope you will be, too. Of course, the show tonight was produced by the inimitable John Kepi, engineered by Randy Kerbway, who is so good he can do it without even being here. He's on vacation. Show was announced, at least in part, by Brian Reznor and brought to you, as ever, by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they are working for you. Also brought to you by our very good friends, the West Virginia Pipe Trades. The show, of course, is archived by Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. Swing on by. Have a listen. We will be back, like I said, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Hey, Agnes.